Chapter 40. While the dozen novices argued over how many groups they should divide into, and which of them would be in which group, Nona took herself to the side and watched the river. She knew the direction they had to head in, east, down the corridor. In the warmth of the convent it had sounded simple enough.
"You'll find your way easy. You grew up in the wild."
Alata had mixed scorn with jealousy. Nona hadn't bothered to explain that when you lived in the grey on the sharp edge of starvation, you didn't spend your days trekking through the wild. You spent it trying to scrape a living from the mean soil. The village had its hunters who took to the wild in search of game. But for every hunter with their forest craft, there were 10 farmers who knew how the winds turned and what to plant where, who had never gone more than 5 miles from the earth-floored hut where their mothers had brought them squalling into the world. When your path lay between 2-mile-high walls of ice, it sounded hard to get lost. But on the ground, with a forest rising about you, it was easy to wander a random spider's crawl, lost in the space of a few dozen acres, despite your best efforts to steer a straight course. The corridor might be a scant 50 miles wide, but walking it, with your view hemmed in by tree and hill, it might as well be 10,000 miles wide. Nona thought of the Globe and Sister Rule's classroom. Abeth in white with its narrow girdle of colour, so thin you might miss it at first glance. So many things depended on perspective, on where you stood, and when. In her class, Sister Pan had shown the novices those drawings that the mind could see 2 ways, or 3, or even 4. Serenity, clarity, patience were all like that. Nothing changed except the way you looked at the world. 1 minute you saw it as you always had seen it, but with a mental step to the left, and with the right perspective, everything could flip. Everything could find a new interpretation. And in a moment, the whole world would change. Nona wondered if the same were true with the wider mysteries of the world. Could Abbess Glass look upon the tangled mess of church and court politics, on the complex web of favor and obligation, and with a small change in the way she saw it, a new emphasis on some seemingly unimportant interaction, suddenly perceive it with new clarity? See it as some simple engine that applying pressure here, pressure there, could drive in the direction of her desires? Were friendships like that? Could Nona step outside the mystery of her entanglements with Ara, and with Clara, and see from some new vantage something simple and understandable? Behind her it sounded as if things were being resolved. She would be with Ara, Clara, and Ruli. Jula with Alata, Lini, and Zol. With the others, in a third group. Argument resurged over the initial routes for each group. Nobody wanted to head through the fens. All 3 groups wanted to trek upstream to the pine forest they'd passed on the way, hoping to find sheltered paths through. The dispute took an hour to resolve, and Nona suspected that in good weather they would have wrangled for days.
"That looks bad,"
Darla raised an arm to the west. A dark bank of cloud had been advancing on them for a while, but now they saw the white wall trailing beneath it.
"Ice storm," Zol scowled. "We should make for the woods."
She turned to go, ignoring protest that they couldn't all go that way.
"That looks worse,"
Nona squinted. There were figures, perhaps a dozen of them, advancing along the banks further downstream, running ahead of the storm, chesting through bushes.
"Derns,"
Ara joined Nona on the highest point of the bank.
"Are those spears?" "Run!"
Jula wasn't given to issuing commands, but everyone obeyed this one, even Tarkax. Moments later, the whole ranging party was sprinting towards the distant tree line. Nona kept her eyes forward, concentrating on the ground ahead. The squall took them all by surprise. One instant they were racing for the trees and the dark spaces between. The next instant the wind rose white about them, a howling swirl laden with sharp fragments of ice. Visibility reduced to arm's length. The wind's roar drowning out shouts and screams, buffeted and blinded. Nona swiftly lost any sense of direction. When a tree loomed at her, she barely avoided running straight into it. What followed was a nightmare of running and hiding and falling ice. Within 100 yards, the blindness of the storm had been replaced by the blindness of the forest, the pines so tight-packed that Nona could hardly squeeze between them. Dry branches raked her as she forced a passage. The wind's rage and the thrashing of treetops allowed only the edges of distant shouts to reach her. Imagination filled every shadowed space with Dernishmen, wild-eyed, knives and axes ready. When the storm relented, Nona found herself cold, exhausted, wet, and alone. She broke from the forest an hour later and tried to orient herself. Eventually, she found a trail and followed it. Nona trudged on, bowed against the wind, feet numb, in damp and muddy shoes. Here and there the wheel ruts lay full of brown water, rotten ice breaking beneath her tread if she put a foot wrong. Her eyes watched the road, her thoughts chased the others. Images rose of her friends skewered on Dernish spears. She shook them from her head. Ruli and Jula would run. Clara and Ara would feed a Dern his own spear. They'd be all right, and the best way to find them again was to head towards their goal. If they had fallen in the forest, she could wander aimlessly among the trees for a month and still not stumble upon them. Nona followed the tracks with most evidence of recent traffic. She knew at this distance it was sufficient to head for the Grey, and that would be hard to miss if she kept generally east and a little north. She checked her directions to the next town with an elderly charcoal burner located by the thin stream of his smoke slanting through the trees, and later with a farmer bringing a score of ragged goats in off the moor. The farmer offered Nona a place by his hearth, but she mistrusted his eyes, fever bright above high cheekbones. Neither man had word of her friends. Nona watched for more raiders. In fact, she watched for anyone at all. The charcoal man had wrung his soot-dark hands and warned of Dernish pirates marauding the fringes, killing the old and taking the young to sell in the flesh markets in Dern. But Nona didn't feel too unsafe. The raiders were at her back. With the ice wind blowing, all but the most desperate among the peasantry had taken a break from their labours to hide inside their homes, waiting for the weather to break. The corridor was never as empty as when the ice wind blew, and whilst the wind might carry a killing edge, at least it delivered a clear view of any stranger approaching bearing killing edges of their own. As the light failed and a new wildness infected the wind, Nona found a dry stone wall to shelter behind. It had been built as a windbreak for sheep, and several of the beasts huddled there when she arrived. They watched her, with goggling eyes, rectangular pupilled and wholly lacking in comprehension. But they soon reached an accommodation. She would ignore them, they would ignore her, and all of them would crowd together out of the gale. The wall was an ancient thing, perhaps older than the scraps of woodland close by, built in years when the wind blew too fierce for any tree to raise its head. Nona had considered making her camp in the copse that ran back along the stream, but the sheep preferred to keep clear of the trees, and she mistrusted the closeness of them, the slow knowledge of their growing and their endless creaking. Nona sat there in the gathering darkness, wrapped in coat and blanket with her back to the wall, and the moan of the wind across the slopes, and the singing of the wind among the trees, and the sharp whisper of the wind between the stones. Around her the sheep shuffled their cloven feet to press themselves close. The sky grew clear. She ate half of her remaining food, hard bread and a boiled egg, then went to sleep hungry. The wind spoke through her dreams, sometimes pulling her from them, only to release her into the next. And although each dream was different from the one before, some dark, some wild, some full of disconnected joy, a thread ran through them all, marrying one to the next. A single twisting line, dividing and joining, running unbroken like the flowing script from Sister Kettle's quill, spelling out word upon word until the words became a river, and the river a story, and the story her life. The dream faded, so completely she could hardly be sure there had ever been a dream, but the thread remained, and the thread was the path, and the path led her to the moment. Nona opened her eyes. The eastern sky held the very faintest hint of a glow. She had slept through the focus moon, through the shifting and grunting of the sheep, through the wind and the sleet. Somewhere in the night a bright sound had broken across the wind's voice, metal on metal. Nona moved slowly to her knees and peered through the gap between two stones at the top of the wall. To her left the ridge was a black suggestion against the darkest grey of the sky. To her right the field sloped down towards a thin stream and the straggling copse. By the tree line, a complication of shadow drew her attention. She watched, eyes narrowed. There's nothing so good as a night dark forest for taking your imagination and giving it form. Nothing, just black shapes and silence. Even so, one by one the sheep left the wall's shelter and trotted away along the slope, angling towards the ridge. Nona didn't follow. She had no reason to break cover, no reason to offer motion to any enemy who might be lurking. The dawn's light spread with agonizing slowness, touching one thing from black to grey, touching the next, making two branches from one threatening limb, making a half-fallen trunk from a silent and watchful monster. As the sun lit the ridge, it brought with it the suggestion of green beneath the thin and patchy ice, and still, though it advanced moment upon moment, the light failed to make sense of the dark tangle where the first trees stepped from the field. Nona drew a breath, sharp and cold across her teeth. That fold was a man's knee, the next an arm, that curve a shield. Perhaps half a dozen of them lay sprawled in death, tangled amid the undergrowth, one hand raised among the thorny coils of the briar. What to do? Move on in ignorance? Investigate and accept the exchange of risk for knowledge? Nona scanned the ridge, then stared again into the stubborn gloom between the trees. Anyone could be watching. But why? She called on her clarity. In her mind she began to juggle, directing her hands to the task, guiding each ball through the necessity of its arc. First three balls, the pattern she saw Amondo try to teach the village children, then four, the pattern he employed while delivering his banter to an audience, drawing them in for his show, then the five, with which the juggler dazzled, and the six, with which he struggled, sweating and anxious, crowning his performance. By nine the world about her lay bound in crystal, no contrast enhanced, no shadow lightened, no detail magnified, the same but different. She stood and everything around her shouted out its meaning. Every part of the puzzle yielded its secrets. She walked in a clarity so fierce it burned her eyes. Nothing had changed. Yet everything had, and the world no longer held a place to hide from Nona Grey. There were five men lying dead, warriors all, raiders from their garb and the salt stain still bedded in their cloaks. Nona approached on slow feet, the mystery of the forest unfolding before her. The attacker had killed them with thrown daggers and a thin sword. Precise blows, no frenzy, no mercy. The slaughter had begun among the trees and ended at the margins. Nona came closer, close enough to smell the rankness of the dead men, the blood, the unwashed stink of travel, the sewer stench that gives the honest and undignified truth of sudden death on a sharp edge. Ice-rimmed blonde hair scattered across blue eyes, sword and axe lay unattended, some hands open and white, some clenched around a last moment of agony, dark with gore. No breath misted from them. Nona snagged the loop of a pack with her toe and drew it closer. She took the dried meat and hard biscuit out of its wrap of oiled cloth and added it to the crumbs of her own supplies. Still ravenous, she reached for another pack and froze. Out of the depths of her clarity, a single fact rose to take her by the throat. Somewhere close, another human heart was beating. From what evidence this fact had been assembled, Nona couldn't say. She knew only that it was true. She stood watching the silence of the trees and of the shadowed spaces between them. The raiders had been moving through the edge of the copse where it reached back along the stream. They had been attacked as they moved to leave, aimed at the sheep wall where Nona had been sleeping. 10 yards past the first splash of the raiders' blood, Nona left their trail, written in the patchy ice and half-frozen mud, to strike deeper into the forest. She tore through bramble, broke a path among the sharp and brittle branches of the stunted Ardna bushes where they grew thick between the elms. To her own ears she sounded like an army on the move. Every instinct told her to leave, to carry on along her path, reach the target and leave this mystery for others. But why would anyone lie in wait for her in a freezing wood when they could have found her sleeping? Nona saw blood on the leaves first, then blood against the trunk of one tree, smeared across another, then the boot, then the leg, then coming around the bole of a great frost oak, the body, sitting propped up against the tree, head down, face hidden within the hood of a convent ranging coat. She stood, suddenly terrified, her heart unwilling to beat. A moment later, what she had taken for her sixth corpse of the morning rolled its head back.
"Hello, Nona."
Sister Kettle watched her, eyes dark in a pale face, the blood around her mouth a shocking crimson, the smile that was always there, there no longer.
"Kettle!"
Nona rushed to crouch beside the fallen nun.
"What?"
The white hand clutched around a knife hilt stole her words. The blade jutted from Kettle's side, the coat below glistening with blood. The pommel, an iron ball, was all that showed of the knife. The rest was lost in her grip.
"Little Nona,"
Sister Kettle discovered her old smile.
"You found me,"
she coughed, sputtering scarlet, her lips very red.
"Oh, I shouldn't do that,"
a grimace.
"It hurts."
Nona found her eyes misting, one hand on Kettle's shoulder, the other in her hair.
"You'll be all right. You'll be all right. You need to run, little Nona."
Kettle's eyes scanned the trees, her head unmoving.
"No."
Nona shook her head.
"You killed them. They're all dead. I checked. That wasn't me."
Kettle licked her lips.
"You don't have any water."
Nona bent and started to dig out her canteen.
"That wasn't me,"
she smiled.
Natural hazard. I wouldn't have stopped them finding you. All part of the ranging. Tough break, but these are tough times, Nona."
"Who did it, then?" Nona glanced around while she held the canteen to Kettle's mouth. The clarity had left her in a moment, taken by shock when Kettle raised her face.
"Noi Gwyn. That's why I was set to follow you." "Why?"
The words sat in front of too many questions, and Nona couldn't pick which one to ask.
"Wanted you for herself. Proud. These Noi Gwyn. A small girl escaped 2 years ago. Wasn't going to let that stand. No matter what promises Thurin Taxus might have made the Emperor. Where is she?"
Nona's gaze returned to the knife in Kettle's side. She had held its twin, pulled it from her bed.
"Her hurt."
Kettle showed her teeth red with blood.
"I got her good, but she ran."
She winced.
"You have to run, too. She could come back. Others with her."
"I'm not going." Nona hunted for a reason.
"I'm safer with you." "No, they don't know where you're going. They trailed us from the convent or knew we land the novices along the rattle, but the target's always different. Cover your tracks and head north away, then make for the Kring. You should be able to catch up with Ara. She's safe. Sister Apple is shadowing her. Takes more than a storm to shake Apple off. Apple, are we all under guard?
Nona frowned. Even now, with blood dripping from the trees, it felt wrong, like cheating.
Little Nona,
Kettle grinned as if reading her mind.
Not all, just you. Because of the assassins, and Ara, because of her father, and the Chosen One.
And the Chosen One?
Nona frowned. Kettle spat blood.
Appy will kill me, but...
She shrugged. Winston glanced down at the knife.
She'll have to hurry.
What do you mean?
Arabella's not the Chosen One. You're not either.
Kettle put her hand on the one Nona had on her shoulder. It felt like ice.
You both shields, if you like. It's soul. She's a straight-up, certified four-blood.
And a tear rolled down Kettle's cheek.
Stepped out of legend. She's come to save us, Nona. I know it.
Zol?
Nona blinked, wondering if Kettle had grown delirious.
That's what convinced the abbess of Sherzal's good faith, Kettle said. She put Zol into the church's care, with Yisht to guard her. Yisht has a great reputation for her skills, and now Zol only has Tarkax. The Ice Spear's reputation is greater still.
Kettle drew a sharp breath.
And nobody knows Zol is the Chosen One. If anyone is out hunting, it's Ara they'll be after.
Kettle fell quiet for a long moment, long enough for the questions to start crowding in on Nona. How could she help? Could she drag Kettle if she made a travois from branches? The raiders had rope.
You have to go, Kettle broke the silence. Run. Find Ara.
I'm not leaving.
Nona sat back on her haunches, arms folded.
It's not a request.
Another breath hitched past gritted teeth.
In the absence of the abbess or senior sister, I represent the convent's authority.
I'm still not going.
It's a direct order.
Kettle furrowed her brow.
In the name of the ancestor.
Nona shrugged.
I've never been that convinced by this ancestor business. I prefer the Hope Church myself, or perhaps the Tunnel Gods. Nona!
Kettle tried to sit up and fell back with a gasp.
This is serious. You have to go. The Noi Gwyn will call others.
Nona shrugged again.
I'll kill them if they come.
She paused, thinking over Kettle's words.
How would your wounded assassin call for help? They're shadow workers. She could reach out to another if they had the bond. How far?
It depends.
A mile? 10? Most shadow workers could send a simple call for help, a fair distance.
So call her.
Who?
Nona levelled a narrow stare at Kettle.
Sister Apple. But Arabella. The Noi Gwyn want me, not her. And they'll track me from here if I run. So we need someone here to stop that happening. And if Ara needs protecting, well, I'm the shield, aren't I? I passed the ordeal, you didn't.
But...
Call her!
Nona shouted it.
I don't want her to see me die!
Kettle shouted it back. Nona sat back stunned.
You're not going to die!
The words came rough from a dry throat.
It's just a small knife. It had venom on it, Nona. It's eating at me. I can feel it in my bones.
Wait!
Nona fumbled in her habit, her fingers clumsy with grief.
I've got the black cure.
She brought the vial out.
Little Nona.
Kettle's old smile returned.
Where in the world?
I made it.
Nona twisted the cap.
You've got to drink it.
Kettle gave a weak grin.
I'd rather drink ditch water. You should throw that away. It's dangerous stuff, even when not made by novices. But I'm a sister of discretion, Nona. I've already taken the black cure. I took it when I first saw her. It's why I'm still alive. But it's not enough. Sister Applewood know. She could do something. She's the poisoner. She could... They still call her that?
The ghost of a smile now. A weak thing.
Call her! No. Call her, or I swear by the ancestor I'll track and kill this Neuguin. And then I'll find the tetragode and start killing the rest of them until there are none left. Nona.
Nona shrugged.
I'm going. I saw her blood trail. It went west towards the river.
She got up.
I believe you're serious.
Kettle looked surprised, though Nona could see no reason for it.
I swear that I will do what I say.
Nona sprang away, starting back along the path that she had broken through the undergrowth.
Nona!
Nona turned. All around Kettle the shadows gathered, a dark mist bleeding through the wind.
Can you reach her?
Kettle sat with her head back against the bark, her face white as death, a tear running from the corner of her eye.
I could always reach her. 1,000 miles wouldn't matter.
She raised an arm, unsteady, and beneath it a shadow blacker than the night stretched out, reaching for infinity, as if the sun had fallen behind her.
It's done. She knows I need her. She knows the direction. You swear it? I swear it. By the ancestor? By the ancestor.
The faintest echo of that grin.
And by the hope, the missing gods who echo in the tunnels, and by the gods too small for names who dance in buttercups and fall with the rain. Now go. For the love of all that's holy, go. You wear me out, Nona, and I've got to concentrate on being alive. It would break her heart to get here and find me dead.
She drew a shallow breath.
They're both in that direction. If you take it until you find some sort of trail, there's a good chance you'll find Ara and the others on it. Try to travel with Ara and Zol. Tarkax may be able to protect you if the Neuguin track you from here.
Another shallow breath snatched in over her pain.
Go! Now!
Nona came forward. She set her canteen in Kettle's lap and kissed her icy forehead. Then she ran. Chapter 41 Clara found Nona before Nona found Ara. She came hurrying along a forest track in the late afternoon, chased by a dark squall.
Nona! Hold up!
Nona turned on the path, relieved, feeling the sweat on her forehead start to freeze as she faced the wind.
You were racing!
Clara came puffing to a halt.
My excuse was trying to catch up to you. What's yours?
The same,
Nona grinned.
Are the others safe? I've been imagining awful things.
Don't know. You're the first I've seen.
Clara bent over, hands on her thighs, catching her breath.
I got very lost for a while back there, so I'm pretty sure everyone's ahead of us. Ancestor, bleed me! Where in the hells did you get that?
She straightened, staring at the naked blade in Nona's hand, a short sword of Dernish blue steel, as long as a man's arm from elbow to fingertips.
I took it off a raider, Nona frowned. Do you think the others are safe?
Clara puffed through her lips.
Don't know. We need to find Ara, though, and the rest of them. Raider? One of the ones that chased us?
She glanced back along the track and scanned the trees more slowly.
They're going to want that sword back.
No,
Nona said.
They're not. Come on.
She set off at a jog.
Wait up!
Clara hurried to catch up.
Are they after you?
Someone might be, and we need to find the others.
Someone?
Suspicion crossed Clara's face. She looked nervous.
You're not making a lot of sense. Save your breath for running. Nona led off as the wind started to build. The edge of the squall caught them before they'd covered 50 yards, whipping the screw pines into a frenzy, howling between the trunks, seizing icicles as long as Nona's blade, and shying them across the track.
You killed a person who had that sword, didn't you? Clara ducked beneath a broken length of icicle, Hunska swift.
They're not alive anymore. The wind took whatever answer Clara had to that, and for the next 10 minutes they ran in a maelstrom of ice, wind, and flying branches, dodging what they could, relying on the thickness of their coats and hoods to take the brunt of any impacts they failed to avoid. An hour later they were crunching their way through frozen puddles on a lane between beleaguered potato fields. The hedgerows bore scattered stands of whore-apple, the dark red fruit glistening with frost.
"Where is she? Typical Ara. She's going to have me running all the way to the Kring."
Clara pulled level again.
"You're very keen to find Ara," Nona said, eyeing her friend. "I didn't think you liked her."
"Well, I do," Clara snatched a breath.
"And you should throw that sword away. It's weighing you down, and you're hardly going to use it. We haven't moved past knife work yet."
"I should throw this sword away?" Nona slowed.
"It must weigh a ton."
Nona came to a halt. She held the sword up between them.
"I should throw it away?"
She met Clara's dark gaze.
"I don't need it."
Clara looked away, her eyes on the track ahead.
"Nona!"
Nona let the sword fall. It fell point first and stuck in the ground between them.
"Come on, then."
And she ran on.
"Hey, novices!"
The cry came from behind them. Nona and Clara stumbled to a halt and turned. A moment later, Nona had Ara in her arms. The Jotsis heir, eyes bright, face reddened by the wind, returned the hug, grinning.
"Who are you, and where have you hidden, Nona?"
Ara squeezed her and stood back.
"Since when are you a hugger?"
"I'm your shield. You have to hold your shield tight."
Nona glanced around at Ara's cold camp. Just the windbreak and a log to sit on.
"We have to find Zol next."
"What the hell for?"
Clara looked suddenly fierce.
"Zol?"
Ara's smile fell away.
"She's Tarkax's responsibility. We need to find Jula and Ruli."
"Zol," Nona confirmed. "Because Sister Apple isn't looking after you anymore. And we need Tarkax in case anyone makes a move on you. Also, the countryside is thick with Dernish raiders. I saw another party 2 miles back. That's the third I've seen."
"Sister Apple wasn't looking after me in the first place."
Ara glanced around as if the poisoner might be standing behind a tree.
"Was she?" "More raiders. I didn't see any."
Clara turned to look back along the road.
"We need to get moving."
Nona started back towards the track.
"Nona!"
Both of them shouting. Nona stopped and turned back towards them.
"Sister Apple was shadowing you. She's a senior sister of discretion. You would hardly expect to see her. And yes, Clara, more raiders. They didn't see us in the squall, or did, and weren't interested. They may be next time."
She set off again.
"Let's go,"
offered over her shoulder. Ara wanted to know how Nona knew about Sister Apple's presence, or absence, given the impossibility of spotting a Grey Sister who didn't want to be seen. So while they hastened along the road, Nona told them the whole story, except for the part about Zol being a four-blood prophecy fulfilling legend. She wasn't entirely happy with that part herself. Not that she wanted to be Sister Wheel's darling or anything. It just didn't make sense. By giving Zol into the church's care, Shirzal had made Abbess Glass trust her intentions. It was a precious gift. It removed any suspicion that the Emperor's sister wanted to steal Ara or Nona to control the Argatha or the prophecy. She had just given Abbess Glass the Argatha and put into her hands control of the prophecy, fake though it might be. And yet,
Nona knew that Shirzal's intentions were not to be trusted. She had tried to abduct Ara, and she had put Yisht into the convent to steal the shipheart. Had Zol just been the price she was prepared to pay for the chance to steal it? When Nona had finally laid the whole thing out for them, Ara seemed satisfied.
So, if you spent the morning hunting the forest and helping Sister Kettle, that explains why you had to run so hard to catch up with me.
Ara jogged on, gathering her breath.
But you said Clara was racing to catch up with you. So why was she so far behind, too? Sister Tallow said to take things slow and steady. So since I got clear of the chaos at the river, I've been doing just that.
Both of them turned to look at Clara running beside them, red-faced, holding her side. Under their stares, she stumbled to a halt.
I need a rest. I can't run all the way to the Kring. There's the best part of 60 miles left.
Why were you so far behind, Ara? Nona asked.
Got lost. I said already, all right?
Clara scowled, exasperated.
I'm a city girl. You may have been brought up by wolves, and Arabella here might have had estates to hunt on. But I know streets and markets and houses, and if I see 3 trees together, I know I've gone the wrong way.
Shelter that second night came in the form of a pigsty among a collection of hovels that made Nona's village look prosperous. Their initial welcome was the 2 points of a pitchfork and a hasty assembling of fierce-eyed peasants armed with hatchet and hoe. Through Ara's smooth diplomacy, the opening offer of brutal murder was negotiated down to room in the unoccupied sty on fresh straw, and the threat of violence if they tried anything funny. Clara, fishing in her habit in the privacy of their new accommodation, came out with a handful of silver, from which she dug out a copper, and went on to purchase a slab-like loaf of black bread and a wrap of rancid butter.
"Where did you get all that money?"
Nona asked, chewing on her portion of the loaf.
"I told you, my father's fortunes have changed."
Clara's jaw bulged as she ground away at the bread. It seemed as if more grit had been used than flour. She played her gold sovereign across her knuckles.
"The church teaches faith, but what you learn is that it's money that moves mountains. The church preaches the ancestors' creed, but it's gold that talks. Everything we do, all this business of emperors and temples, all the war, alliances, murders, hospitals, all of it floats on money. The currents that move these things, make them dance, are all financial. Politics, religion, love, faith, even hate, are just the things people say. This," she held the coin before her eye between finger and thumb, "this is what they mean."
"That's a shallow view of the world, Clara,"
Ara watched from the corner, hunched in her ice-rimmed coat.
"Says the girl whose whole life was built on gold."
"There are things that can't be bought or sold," Nona said. Clara shook her head.
"Some would say everything has its price, and that it's often surprisingly cheap. Others, that if a thing cannot be bought, it has no value."
"What about friendship?" Nona asked.
"Ah,"
Clara lay back, settling herself to sleep.
"There, you have to be careful."
Ara had managed to establish that several novices had passed through the village hours before them, but how many novices or hours proved difficult to pin down. Nona doubted that there were any behind them, though, not unless the Derns had them. The novices took turns watching through the night. Nona spent her hours staring at the darkness, wondering if Sister Kettle still lived, and what horrors Sister Apple might have wrought upon her attackers, if not. She wondered, too, at the raiders she had seen, lying at broken angles where the Noiguan had left them. They'd been young men, pale with short, fair beards and eyes the blue of cornflowers. She wondered what had driven them across the sea. They looked too well-fed, too well-equipped, to have come so far in order to terrorize peasants in their shacks. Does a man with a good iron sword cross an ocean to steal a half-starved goat? She watched the darkness and painted the raiders across it, breathing life back into their pale limbs. Would they come this far inland, or retreat now, fearing to be cut off when the Emperor's new armies arrived? No raiders came in the night, or if they did, they moved on, hoping for richer pickings than promised by the cluster of hovels. The three girls got up as the sky paled, and set off towards the valley, a shallow one that stretched east and north towards the distant hills where the sun would soon rise.
She said it was the only way through, the only easy way anyhow, and if we want to catch the others we want the quickest path.
Clara had taken the lead. The old woman who extorted a copper from her, for last night's bread, had also furnished her with directions to Aemon's Cut, a gorge that she claimed to be the only safe passage through the colourfully named Devil's Spine. Nona could tell from the terrain that some river of ice had pressed forward here as it once had across the Grey, but more recently, perhaps only a century or two earlier, retreating to leave the bedrock scraped bare of soil, fierce ridges standing where veins of harder stone ran. The spine was one such vein of obdurate granite left standing, where the slow, implacable currents of the ice carved softer rock away. It stood perhaps 1,000 yards proud of its surroundings, but near vertical, and honed to a razor edge running north and south for 12 miles and more. The novices had heard of the Devil's Spine. Ara had even seen it before as a small child, a curiosity on a trip to visit some or other far-flung fruit of her family tree. But not until they drew close, harried by the ice wind, did they properly appreciate the wisdom in seeking an easy passage from one side to the other.
"We'll go to Aemon's Cut and press on. We'll catch the rest or we won't. We can meet them at the Kring if not," Clara said. "Apart from not having Ruli, this is the group we're going to be in anyway."
Crossing the rock wastes took longer than anticipated. Fissures ran across the stone miles long, yards wide in places. In other areas the stone lay pockmarked with sinkholes, some filled with dark water, some empty with sharp edges, some wide enough to drown in, some small enough to trap a foot and break an unwary ankle. By late afternoon they had spotted the cut. By early evening they had reached the approach. The three novices wound their way through a maze of rocky gullies that snaked in confusion across the fractured rock, up towards the cut, still almost 1/2 mile off. The wind that had plagued them since leaving the Rock of Faith slackened, as if daunted by the Devil's Spine, growing fitful.
"It's changing," Ara said.
"We might find we have a corridor wind tomorrow to blow us the rest of the way to the Kring," Clara said.
Nona hoped so. Her father had hunted up on the ice most of his life, whereas she had spent most of hers hiding behind whatever walls she could find when the ice winds blew. 3 days bearing up under its breath had only deepened the respect she felt for him. It added a new dimension to her concerns over Yisht. Would a woman raised in such a place truly let her ambitions be thwarted by children, or forget the indignity that heaped upon her? A break in the clouds scattered sunlight across the ridged rock. Nona stopped in her tracks. Just as there's a power in many clear voices, ringing in harmonies, it lives too in the shadows of clouds and in the light moving across landscapes, watched in still moments.
"It is changing," Clara started up again. "We'll be home and safe in the warm before we know it. I'm going to buy everything in the pillared market."
Her chatter had a nervousness to it. She seemed distracted, glancing around. "We should..." Nona bit off the words, eyes upon the pebble that had just bounced past her. She made a slow turn, poised to spring. Ahead of her, Ara and Clara came to a halt. Tarkak stood in the mouth of a small cave some way back along the gully. They had passed just 10 yards beneath without seeing him. He beckoned to them, an urgent gesture, one finger to his lips. Behind him in the shadows they could see a smaller figure in a raincoat.
"Come on!"
Nona started off towards the warrior.
"No!"
Clara called after her.
We need to push on. You can't trust him.
Nona looked back. Clara hadn't moved. Ara stumbled to a halt halfway between them.
That's why we're here, Nona said. We came to find Tarkax. Sister Kettle told me to. So Ara has a guard over her now Sister Apple's gone. Trusting him is the whole point.
Well, I don't. Clara raised her arm towards Aemon's cut. That's where we need to go. That's the path to our target. Sister Tallow is waiting there. She'll have half the convent's Red Sisters with her now. They know how serious it is with the Durnish.
I told Kettle we'd find Tarkax, Nona said, frowning.
Well, we've found him. Now, let's go, Clara said. Remember who he is? I saw him at the Kaltis talking to Yisht. If we hadn't put her in a barrel, it would be her standing in that cave. It would be her that Sister Kettle told you to find to look after Ara. Did you trust Yisht?
Nona didn't answer that, just glanced back towards Tarkax, now crouched further back in the shadow of the cave's entrance.
Let's go!
Clara started back along the gully towards the cut.
No, Clara!
Nona had promised Kettle. She had sworn to a dying woman, to her friend.
Come on!
She waved Ara after her and hurried up across the steep slope towards the warrior of the Ice Tribes.
Nona?
Ara followed, but slower, faltering.
What about Clara?
She'll follow us, Nona said,
unsure of whether she wanted it to be true. Nona reached the cave first. Tarkax remained crouched, his eyes not straying to her but keeping to the ridges and gullies. Nona moved past him, seeing in surprise that the gloom held four novices. Her eyes had yet to adjust, but one of them was so large she could only be Darla. Ignoring them for the moment, Nona turned to see Ara coming past Tarkax and running up behind her, a wrathful Clara looking ready to punch someone.
Nona!
Jula and Ruli closed on her from both sides.
Glad the Durnish didn't chop you up, squirt!
Darla pulled her hood back. She had a black eye and a bloody nose. Nona wondered how the other person looked. Zol glanced her way but said nothing, remaining close to Tarkax.
Why are you here?
Nona asked it, of the cave in general.
There are soldiers waiting by the cut.
Tarkax didn't turn his head.
Perhaps a dozen. They're in ambush position, so it's hard to tell.
Raiders, Ara said. This far inland?
Soldiers,
Tarkax corrected.
Not Durnmen.
What's the problem with soldiers?
Clara remained at the mouth of the cave, out past Tarkax.
The Emperor's general probably dispatched them to hold the pass in case the Durnish came this way in force.
Get in, out of sight, girl!
Tarkax waved Clara behind him.
And they're not the Emperor's men. No uniforms. I killed two in the gullies. One died slower than the other. Said he was a Taxis man.
They're in Taxis, Ruli held Nona's arm. But he said he'd leave Nona alone. He swore it to the Emperor.
He didn't swear he wouldn't come after Ara, though, Clara said.
Tarkax edged back from the entrance.
Some men will swear anything to anyone to get what they want. I wouldn't place much faith in Taxis words.
He drew his tular, the flat blade hissing from its scabbard, sounding just like Yisht's had back in the tunnels.
They're coming. They must have sent more scouts out and spotted you.
We can't stay here.
Ara started towards the entrance.
We need to run.
Tarkax lowered his blade into her path.
We'd be caught and killed in the open. Here they can only come at us from one direction.
There's 12 of them.
Darla from the rear of the cave. Tarkax rolled his head and shrugged.
On the right ground, 12. I can take. You, in the cave!
It had taken the best part of an hour before the shout came. Perhaps the Taxis men had spread out to encircle and catch the prey they expected to run. Nona had seen few hours pass more slowly, as if she clung to every heartbeat of it with Hunska battle speed. Tarkax had returned his sword to its scabbard, and told them Sister Tala would bring the Red Sisters out looking for them in 2 days. He also said that they would all be dead or on their way again before sunset, so whatever Sister Tallow might do was of no relevance. Nona, Ara leaned forward, her face in shadow. Are you all right? There's something odd about your eyes.
We've more to worry about than my eyes.
Nona looked away towards the brightness beyond the rocky entrance. The shout came again.
You! In the cave! Only my voice.
Tarkax held a finger to his lips and back towards the bunched novices, coming to stand between Zol and Ara.
They mustn't know who or how many stand with me.
He cupped his hands and called out.
You! Outside!
We want the girl! Send her out and we'll go!
I met two of your number in the gully to the east,
Tarkax shouted back.
They have joined the Ancestor. I am Tarkax, the Ice Spear. If you want the girl, you must come and take her.
He glanced over his shoulder.
They'll waste an hour finding they're dead, if we're lucky.
Why would they do that? Ara asked.
There's a lot to learn from dead men,
Tarkax said.
Were they shot with an arrow, taken from behind, garrotted, killed in the same place or apart, by one person or more? Were the attackers bleeding when they left?
He shrugged.
A cautious man would want to know. These soldiers, they know my name. Now they wish to learn if the man calling it to them is really Tarkax. Perhaps they will wait until they can bring more troops. The longer they spend out in the open growing cold, the better it is for us.
You couldn't really kill 12, could you?
Ara asked. The warrior puffed out his chest.
I am Tarkax.
He winced and started to turn.
Ow!
Ara's face creased with sudden pain, and she too started to turn. Nona was already spinning around when she felt the sharp jab in the side of her neck. As she turned, Nona saw Clara tangled with Zol, both of them twisting, punching, blocking with a speed that only a Hunska full-blood could hope to follow. They fell together, Clara beneath the Ice Tribe girl.
Get Zol off her!
Ara dived in, snatching at her wrist and missing. Tarkax stood unmoving for what seemed an age at fight speed, long enough for Ara to finally catch Zol's arm and hang on despite a kick to the stomach. Nona just watched, flooded with a cold certainty and hot despair. Jula, Ruli, and Darla also stood statue still, but trapped in the moment as any without Hunska blood would be. Clara tore free, bleeding from the mouth, a hank of her dark hair in Zol's fist as Ara wrestled the girl from the ice away, gaining momentary advantage from the fact that the whole of her attention was aimed at Clara. For his part, Tarkax threw himself back and to the left, towards the cave wall, and Nona watched, her neck stung where the venom-coated pin had been jabbed in. Ara held Zol atop her, her arms looped beneath Zol's armpits, her hands clamped behind Zol's head and both legs wrapped around the Ice Triber. But Zol still somehow managed to reach down and grip beneath Ara's ribcage, causing her to cry out in excruciating pain. It was all the chance Zol needed to twist out of the hold. She rolled across the floor towards Clara. Nona didn't act. She couldn't act. She had to see this played out. She had to believe it. She stood and she watched through slitted eyes. Tarkax landed beside his backpack and tore it open. Zol rose from her roll, hurling herself bodily at Clara. Clara's foot, aimed at her face, caught her collarbone and brought her down with a snapping sound, the whole of Clara's thigh muscle absorbing the girl's momentum. Tarkax, fumbling, brought out a leather wrap from among his supplies and began to unroll it. It held close on a dozen small leather tubes, sealed with wax and sewn to the wrap. A throwing star blurred across Nona's vision and took the leather strip, tubes and all, from Tarkax's grip. Clara's throwing star. Ara got up, stiffly. Zol rolled to her side and jerked into a sitting position, eyes blazing. Tarkax drew his tuler in a stuttering motion.
"You!"
Ara stared at Clara, horrified. She took an awkward step towards her.
Why?
She had to jerk her whole body around to take the next step. Zol tried to stand, but fell to her side. Tarkak staggered forward and tumbled, the sword flying from his hand, his head hitting the rocks hard.
Money, said Clara, rising smoothly to her feet. Lots of money. Enough gold to raise my family to the Sis, and more besides.
She turned to look at Nona, still standing where she had stood since the first sharp prick of betrayal.
It's Ara he wants, Nona. Thurin Taxus swore to the Emperor not to harm you. He'll take her, get his concessions from the Jotsis, and sell her back. All through third parties. She won't lose anything but a month or two on some family prospects. And that scarcely matters if she's to be a Red Sister.
Clara stepped closer.
So you see, it's hardly anything.
Closer still. Close enough to whisper. I'll miss you, Nona. She pulled her head back and stared.
What in hell is wrong with your eyes? They're black. Every bit.
Nona's fist connected with the side of Clara's head. The sort of solid blow that puts an end to conversations and to fights. She was at Tarkax's pack almost before Clara hit the ground, but she felt as though she were running through a bad dream. Clara would abandon her for as little as money? Trust, Sister Apple had said, was the most insidious of poisons. It hurt Nona to know how well she had learned that lesson.
Tie her up, quick!
She threw the rope from the warrior's pack at Darla.
Quick! Gag her too!
A moment later she had the leather wrap, crouching so as not to be seen from outside the cave. Clara's throwing star, the four-pointed one from Partners Reeve, was stuck in it. The contents of four tubes dripped from the leather, unstoppered by the impact. She brought it back across the cave and threw herself down beside Tarkax.
Which one? Which one?
She waved it before his face, but his eyes were unfocused, blood leaking from beneath his cheek and forehead where he had struck a rock. He had been reaching for the antidote. She knew that. But which tube was it in? She couldn't risk using the wrong one. She might dose him with a whole new poison. Rising, Nona went to Ara and held her face in both hands, putting herself in her eyeline.
You've been poisoned, Ara. Clara jabbed you with a needle. It was coated with lock-up. Tincture of Segrin root? You had it before, first day with the poisoner. You'll be fine.
She glanced across to Ruli, standing helpless, watching as Darla and Jula bound the unconscious Clara.
Help me lie her down.
Together they lay Ara on the ground, the unnatural stiffness of her limbs unpleasant to touch.
Your eyes, Nona.
Ruli looked up from her examination of Ara, one hand still twined in the gold of her hair.
What's wrong with them?
Nona reached up to touch them.
I don't know. I can see. They don't hurt. But they're black. Like someone poured ink into them.
Ruli looked frightened, but there was plenty more to be frightened about than odd eyes.
I took the black cure, the one I made with Hessa and Ara.
Ruli's fear turned to horror.
Why? Why would you do that?
Nona pointed towards the brightness of the slopes.
Those soldiers haven't just come for Ara. I don't care what promises Thurin Taxus made or where he made them. Raymel Taxus wants his revenge, and someone out there knows that if they don't go back with me, they may as well not go back at all. Maybe all of them know that. And if they come, I'm going to go down fighting, not poisoned and helpless, ready to be bound and carried off to some torture chamber.
It was almost true. She had put the vial to her lips when she heard that the soldiers were advancing on the cave, worried that they might carry venoms to take her alive. But what had made her tip it into her mouth? That had been the memory of Clara coming back off the plateau, having brewed the catweed liquor. She had blamed the stink on poor Malkin, because, despite the plant's name, Sister Apple's silly rhyme held truth. Catweed didn't smell like a cat weed, but Segrin root did. I took it because I didn't trust my friend. That was the truth, and like many truths, it was hard and it hurt. When Nona raided Sister Apple's stores, she had stolen catweed and Segrin root along with anything else that looked useful. After Clara's alchemy out on the plateau, some of both were missing. The Segrin root cut to disguise the loss. But Nona had spotted it anyway, because the smell had made her suspicious. And hating herself, she had checked up on Clara. Nona had come on the ranging knowing that Clara was carrying lockup. She just hadn't quite known why.
"Zol's talking."
Jula was crouched beside the girl that Shazal had set among them, the Foreblood come to claim her place in history. "Tarkax got the biggest dose, then Ara, then me. Zol got jabbed in the fight, but Clara must have been running out of needles, or used one twice."
"Kill her."
Zol watched Nona kneel beside her, her black eyes dull. "I'm not killing her," Nona said. Whatever Clara had done, she was Nona's friend. It wasn't a bond made for breaking. "She's well tied."
"Kill."
"No," Nona snapped the word. "Tell me what Shazal wants. We're probably going to die here, so you may as well. The Taxis aren't going to want to leave witnesses. Tell me, and I'll do my best to draw things out so you've got a chance to face this on your feet."
"Agatha."
Zol forced the word past a locked jaw. "I know she doesn't want that." Nona frowned. "She did. Once. But something changed. She gave you to the Abbess."
"Agatha. Not. Foreblood."
"Yes, it is. That's what the prophecy says. Four bloods speaking with one voice and the Ark will listen."
"Four hearts." "Oh, gods."
Nona looked around. Only Darla and Jula were on their feet, both looking blank.
"Yisht?"
"Yisht," Nona nodded.
"Shazal's after four ship hearts, not one four blood. And Yisht's not going to have given up on getting the one from the convent."
Nona bent back down to Zol.
"What can the Ark do?"
Zol shook her head, just a faint vibration of movement.
"You don't know?"
"No."
"I know,"
Jula said, her voice faint.
"You?"
"Well,"
Jula spread her hands.
"I know what the books in the convent library say about it. Some of them, anyway. I helped Hessa research it. It's what she's been doing for 2 years while we trained to fight."
"And?"
Nona wasn't sure why she cared. There were soldiers out in the gully with swords in hand and murder on their minds.
"What do the books say?"
"They say a lot of things. Miracles, cures, wisdom. All those things."
"So they tell us nothing."
Nona had harboured suspicions about whether anything of worth might be found in a book.
"Hessa said there's a common thread,"
Jula said.
"That's how she found the right books. She's very good with thread work. Better than..."
"Tell me,"
Nona barked. In her mind's eye, the soldiers were already advancing, spread across the slopes, the sun's red light bleeding across their blades.
"Most accounts agree that the Ark can take us to the Hope, just like the four tribes were brought here in their ships. And...
Nona remembered Shazal's smile when Ara tried to cow her with the power of the path. She hadn't looked like a woman who would go to all these lengths to run away to a distant sun, even one that burned so white amid heavens scattered with the red embers of dying stars.
and it controls the moon. It can turn it, change the focus.
Ancestor!
Ruli covered her mouth with a hand.
Shit!
Darla let her jaw drop.
Gods!
Nona shook her head. A person who could steer the moon wouldn't want to flee Abeth. They would own Abeth.
Send out Nona Reeve!
The shout came from outside.
The rest of you can go free!
I thought Clara said they wanted Ara!
Ruli looked confused. They lied to her. Raymel is behind this, not Thurin. Nona wondered what would have happened if the Taxis agent had told Clara the truth. Would her price have gone up because of their friendship? Or down because Nona had nobody to avenge her? She wondered how long Clara had been slipping into the Taxis pocket. What information had she first sold to turn that copper penny into a silver crown?
Send out Nona Reeve!
On the floor, Clara opened her eyes and started to struggle in her bonds, grunting around the strip of cloth that Darla had gagged her with. How long had she been feigning unconsciousness? Just one more deception. And why this sudden panic? Nona met her gaze and realized she felt anger, but no hate. Her friend would never have sold her. The Taxis had used Clara, tricked her, played on her resentment of Ara's wealth.
"Just the girl!"
shouted from the slope. Nona spun around.
"I'll go to them, but we're going to have to fight either way."
"Fight?"
Darla snorted and kicked Clara into stillness.
"With what? We're going fists against swords?"
Nona pressed Clara's throwing star into Ruli's palm. "That's one dead, right there." She retrieved Tarkax's forgotten Tuler from the shadows, surprised by the weight of it, and put it into Darla's hands.
"Get his jacket and trews on. You're not that much bigger. Keep your hood. If they're scared of you, it gives you an edge."
She bent and pulled the long knife and hatchet from Tarkax's belt. Close up, he smelled of wood smoke and a spice she didn't recognize.
"Jula, take these."
She pushed them at her.
"What are you going to use?"
Jula asked, the weapons trembling in her grip. She was a natural warrior despite her affection for books, but also terrified. And why not? The Taxis soldiers would make as short work of the novices as Partners Reeve's apprentices had. They were adults against children, and well-trained. Darla might be a man's match in strength, but she held an unfamiliar sword, and it shook in a white-knuckled grip. Also, there were 12 out there, and in the cave, Nona was the only Hunska standing.
"Let me tell you a story," she said.
"What?"
Darla seemed unimpressed, angry at her own fear.
"A story."
Nona motioned for them to sit.
"We have time. If they weren't going to check Tarkax's kills, then they would have rushed us by now."
"What story?"
Ruli asked, turning the throwing star over and over in her hand, her gaze on Clara.
"A true story."
Nona looked across to where Ara lay watching, trapped in her poisoned body.
"I lied before, about why my village gave me to the child taker, why my mother let them. I lied and lied again. Now it's time to tell the truth."
She had their attention now. Even Darla, whom she had told no lies, would have heard the story from others. Perhaps even Zol knew it.
"A juggler once came to my village. He was my first friend."
And Nona let the words run from her tongue. It had been the truth that she told the second time, of how Amondo had left and her mother blamed Nona for it. And Nona had believed her mother even though the reasons were beyond her understanding. It had been the truth when she said that she had followed the juggler, taking directions from Mother Sybil out in the far fields. It had all been the truth up until the first trees of the Relum forest rose around the road. "Everywhere has its ghosts," Amondo had said, but in most places those ghosts are at least hidden in the corners, or tucked away at right angles to the world waiting their moment. In the Relum forest you could see the ghosts, patterned on the gloom beneath the canopy, the distortion of their faces frozen into the bark of ancient trunks. And you could hear them too, screaming into the silence, not quite breaking it, but making it tremble. I followed, not caring about ghost or fairy, because when a true fear takes hold of you, it drives out the others, the ones people try to give you, try to put into the heart of you with stories and dark looks. A true fear grows in the bones of you. I followed because I thought that if I turned back then, I would keep turning back, turning away from every other fear, from every new thing, and that I would never leave that place to which my father had brought me. I would live, toil, grow old and die, all within sight of my mother's hut, and the ice would remain forever a line glimpsed in the distance, and I wouldn't matter to the world, nor would it matter to me. That was a bigger fear than the shadows between the trees. I let the path lead me, not stopping, for it's when you stop that things catch up with you, and not quickening my pace, for in a haunted forest any increase in the speed with which you walk is a slippery slope to blind panic, and the mad dash that sees you lost in the deep wood with a broken ankle. I walked until it grew too dark to see the trail, and then I sat with my back to an oak and watched the dark. Rain came, thick with sleet, pattering down among the leaves, gathering and dripping, sliding to the forest floor with the soft wet sounds imagination can fashion into nightmare. When the focus came, it woke me, first patterning the world in glowing red and black shadow, the undergrowth writhing beneath the sharp relief of branches. As the ground began to steam, I thought I heard a shout, far off, and I took to the trail, running hard, knowing it would be Amando. I met him on the path, rushing towards me out of the fog as fast as I was running towards him. He nearly flattened me, but I'm quick, and I slipped aside at the last second. It happened so swiftly that he didn't even see me. I shouted after him, but he was lost in the pink blanket of the fog. I thought he was gone, but the sound of his feet pounding the track stopped in one sudden moment. "Nona!" "It's me. I followed you." "Dear ancestor, hide! Hide in the trees!" I heard the sounds of his pursuit, more pounding feet, more shouts and cries. "Bleed me!" And Amando came running back, the hot mist swirling as it released him. He grabbed my arm and dragged me off the track, out into the forest. The thorns tore my skirt and cut my legs. "Shh!" Amando pulled me behind a tree, one hand over my mouth. The band chasing him thundered by, clinking metal, rasping breaths, heavy boots. A minute later, Amando drew his hand away and unclenched the other from around my arm. "Why were they chasing you?" "I owe them something."
"Why did you leave?"
"I wore out my welcome on the first day, Nona. The real question is, why would anyone stay?" The focus was passing, and already the fog lay in streamers being trailed through the tree trunks by the wind. The moon's light, no longer fierce, showed Amando's face, worried and watchful.
"I want to know..."
"People always want to know things, until they hear them, and then it's too late. Knowledge is a rug of a certain size, and the world is larger. It's not what remains uncovered at the edges that should worry you, rather what is swept beneath."
"I don't understand..."
He didn't look like the juggler who had thrown and caught for a heel of bread. He looked older and sadder and wiser. "There's a line, Nona, a burning line that runs through the world. It runs through dreams and beneath roots and across the sky. And it leads to you."
"Me?"
I asked. It didn't seem likely.
"Why?"
He managed a smile. "We're back to knowledge again. The important thing is that those men who were chasing me, one of them can follow that line. He calls it a thread. A clever man with clever fingers. He can tie 3 knots in an eyelash, that one. And he'll keep on following that thread. He didn't want to go into the village to get you. So he sent me.
You were there to get me out?
I felt a numbness prickling across my cheekbones and a hollowness in my stomach.
But you said we were...
And a fine job you've done of it, Amondo.
A deep voice rolled out from the direction of the track. Figures moved from shadow to moonlight to shadow. Tall men in uniform, swords at their hips. The soft metal whisper of mail shirts.
Just when I was starting to doubt you.
A laugh.
Nobody took her. Not even itinerant juggler. She ran away by herself. Brilliant.
The soldiers closed on us from all sides. 2 seized Amondo's arms, another took me by the scruff of my neck. The leader, the one Amondo said could follow my thread, moved out into the moonlight. He wasn't old, not much older than Amondo, but he didn't look like us, not like a real person. He didn't look hungry. His beard came rolling down to the bottom of his neck and there wasn't a spot of dirt in it. His cloak was scarlet even in the moonlight, and the silver bands across his shoulders shone bloody with it.
"We still have to hurt you, of course," he said. "For the running."
He motioned to the 2 soldiers, and they began to twist Amondo's arms. He cried out immediately.
"And then, of course, we have to kill you,"
the man added when Amondo paused his scream to gasp in a breath.
"To keep this secret."
That's when I did it. I reached around to where the man had hold of my neck, and I cut him. Skin, muscle, tendons, arteries. Sister Tallow is right. Men are just like pigs inside. And his blood shot out so fast that it drenched my shoulders, even though I was already moving as fast as I knew how to. I knew I had to reach the man with the beard, the man with the clever fingers, without giving him the chance to show any of his cleverness. I slashed him across the stomach before he even noticed I was loose. I cut him, and the bright rings of his mail made bright little sounds as they broke open. He noticed then, and folded up, hugging his belly. I cut that beard of his with another slash, and left him torrenting blood from an open throat. Then it was all running and slicing and screaming. I climbed up one man who tried to chase me around a tree with his knife. I dug my blades into his back and hauled myself up him. A foot on his belt thrust my blades into his neck, heaved up. I jumped from his shoulders onto the last of them. She still had a hand on Amondo's arm, her other one on her sword hilt, half drawn. And when it was done, and they were sprawled among the bushes, and the trees were splashed with gore and cut here and there where the soldiers had swung their swords, I stood in the middle of it all, wearing their blood and screaming. And I was screaming for more. And Amondo ran. Although he was my friend, and I had saved him, he ran. And that's how they found me the next morning. And that's my secret. And that's why my mother let them give me away. I'm a monster. Nona started to walk towards the cave mouth and the day that was dying on the slopes just beyond. That's my secret and my shame. I'm Nona Gray. War is in my veins, and the screams of my enemies are music to me.
"Wait!" Darla shouted. "That's nonsense! Where did you get your knives from? How did you know how to use them? How did you kill 6 warriors?"
Nona turned and slashed a hand across the wall. A shower of fragments scattered out across the cave floor, and where she had struck, 4 gouges remained in the stone, deep and dark.
"But they had swords."
Darla waved hers for good measure. "Never try to swing one in a forest," Nona said, "and never underestimate a wild animal, however small it might be." Darla had no reply, She set her fingers to the cuts Nona had left in the rock and stared in wonder.
"Scarlet and silver?"
Ruli spoke from the back of the cave where she had crouched, listening to Nona's story.
"What?"
With the truth out, Nona ached to leave before they properly understood what she had told them.
"The man was in scarlet and silver. Were the others in uniform?"
Nona tried to see it. She saw blood mostly, and wounds.
"Perhaps?"
"Yes."
"Those are Shazal's colours," Ruli said. "The head man at your village would have known that. He would have known that they couldn't keep you, not with the Emperor's own sister after you. Your mother would have understood too. The child taker was your best chance, hiding in plain sight, a girl with a price on her head, sold for nothing, there in a cage ready for sale. It was all they could do to keep you safe."
"No," Nona waved the idea away as if her blades could slice it into a lie.
"It wasn't like that. They would have told me."
"Really?"
Ruli stood up, staring at Nona with concern. It was more than she could take.
"Not telling you was more likely to stop you coming back."
"I'm going out there." Nona started back towards the cave mouth. "Once it starts, you..."
"Nona, there are 12 of them."
Julia stepped after her, though stopping short, as if she saw something new in Nona's place. Some wild beast, perhaps, with eyes like holes into the night and hands thick with old blood.
"You might have,"
Ruli frowned, staring at Nona's hands.
"Invisible daggers. But they have swords as long as you are tall. And we're not in a dark, misty forest. Don't go."
"I have the path, Ruli." Nona offered a faint smile.
"You have the path at the convent," Ruli said. "But let's be honest, you're not very good with it there. Ara is much better, and Hessa. She knows more about threads than Sister Pan does already. But isn't that the whole point of Shazal wanting the ship heart? This far from it, even a holy witch finds it hard to touch the path. And your serenity, well, it's rubbish."
Ruli looked down.
"Sorry."
"I've given up on serenity," Nona smiled. "It wasn't me. But I do have a new record on Blade Path."
"Blade Path?" Darla asked. "What the hell has Blade Path got to do with anything?"
"New record?" Ruli asked. "You completed it."
"Well..." She looked around the cave, Tarkax lying in a pool of his own blood, Ara and Zol paralyzed, Clara bound and staring dazed over her gag.
"Congratulations!"
"I used the grease," Nona said.
"What?"
"The grease you gave me. I'd been doing it all wrong. I kept going slower and slower and falling off sooner and sooner. It felt wrong. It didn't fit. So I did what I do to reach the path. I ran at it. I cleaned the resin from my feet and greased my soles. Blade Path's all downhill except the bits that aren't. And by the time you reach them, you're going fast enough to carry through."
"But the corkscrew!"
Ruli looked up at her, blinking.
"If you're going fast enough, you can slide around the inside."
Nona grinned.
"It's wonderful. Everything fits together. All the choices, all the balancing. They happen at fight speed. They make sense."
"I did it in 30 counts.
30 counts? Ruli gasped. "That's impossible.
"It's not as fast as Sister Owl," Nona said. "But I was pleased with it."
"I still don't care," Darla said. "How is that silly game going to help against what's out there?"
She waved her sword towards the slope.
"But it's not just a game," Nona said. "We do it for a reason."
"Balance and timing," Jula said.
"The Hunts could do it for that, but the Quant'll do it because it trains the mind for the path. I had a... I suddenly saw everything in a new way.
Nona turned back towards the daylight.
An epiphany,
Jula breathed.
An epiphany.
Sister Kettle had taught Nona the word, but she hadn't found it on her lips when she wanted it. An epiphany. Seeing the world anew with new understanding. Like when Sister Pan's trick pictures suddenly made sense, and you saw the bump as a whole, the young woman as an old lady. The same thing had happened with Clara. Nona had taken a step back, and in an instant seen her treachery whole and clear. The new picture didn't erase the old. The bump was still a hole, but now it was a bump as well. The old lady was still a young one, but now she was old too. Clara was still her friend, and now an enemy also. Nona saw too that the truth had been hers for the taking. Sister Apple's bitter pill. All that had stopped her asking Clara about the throwing star and unravelling the whole tale was her own desire not to speak of Amondo and the forest where she had stood, clothed in blood, revealed to the world as a monster hungry for the kill. One truth for another, and they wouldn't be standing in this cave. But that itself, like most truths, had proved too bitter for the mouth to speak. Epiphany? She saw herself, a child of 9, the dried blood of 6 royal soldiers still in her hair. She saw the child-taker Giljon with one hand on 4-foot's reins, the cart and cage behind him rattling up the lane. She saw Grey Stephen bent in conversation, her mother weeping. She had stared at the memory so long, so many times. Could it be possible to see it another way?
So you think you can walk the path now? Ruli asked. Even here?
I think so, Nona said. I just need to get angry enough. Rage could throw her at the path back in the convent, close to the ship heart. Rage would throw her at it now. Enough of it would. And this time she wouldn't try to slow herself, wouldn't try to stutter to a halt and gain her balance. She would take the speed and aim it down the path and take all the power it would give her and own it. All she needed was the rage. She reached for it. But where a fire had once blazed, only an ember remained. Had her mother truly saved her?
Stay here, Darla said, looking down. You don't have to go out there. Or we could scatter and run.
No, Nona said. If they ran, Darla would be the first caught.
We can wait, Jula said. The poison will wear off, and Tarkax can fight, and...
And Sister Talla will come with the others, Ruli finished.
Go!
Zol managed to put some heat into the word. She understood. If you wanted to win against the odds, you had to carry the fight to the enemy. You had to take them unprepared.
I have to...
But something dark and vast reached up to grab her. And before Nona's mouth closed on the last word, she was gone. Nona had been yanked from her body so swiftly, she hardly had time to feel it begin to fall. She saw nothing, not even darkness, felt nothing save the pull and a sense of rushing. Then, in one moment, she slammed back into herself. She saw a paved yard, Hart Hall on her right, the ancestor's dome rising above the dormitory block to her left. Nona had been poured into someone's skull, but not into her own. She leaned onto her crutch and took another limping step. Hessa. Hessa's thoughts rose around Nona, a tide that threatened to drown her. Nona shouted that she had to go, screamed to be released back to the cave. But Hessa just took another step, as if she had heard nothing. Hessa had known it would be Isht. Even so, finding the gate to the undertunnels unlocked put a cold terror in her. She had shared every excruciating moment that Nona endured when Yisht had held her hands tight about her neck. It might have been Nona's throat that was closed, but Hesse's lungs had burned too, striving for a breath that wouldn't come.
"Why would you think you could come back?"
Hesse whispered. It made no sense. Did the woman want to die? "What are we doing here?" Gena hugged herself against the ice wind, weaker now than it was, at the end of its reign, but still able to carry a sting.
"You need to go to the Abbess. Tell her Yisht has broken into the underground tunnels again."
Hesse had been put in Red Dormitory while Grey Class ranged.
"The Abbess? You're mad. She'll kill me. It's the middle of the night."
Gaina's habitual temper hadn't been improved by Hesse waking her with a pinch and cajoling her to come out into the night despite her protests.
"Tell her Yisht is back. If you don't, she really will kill you. This is serious, Gaina. Deadly serious."
"Ancestor's tits." Gaina spat on the ground and took off running in the direction of the Abbess's house. "You better be right about this. Hop along." Hesse turned back to the gate and sighed. She had taken threads from everything of Yisht's that Nona had brought her. Blood, hair, clothes, a boot knife. And each bright and coiling thread she had pulled taut across her mind, feeling the woman's impotent rage as she jolted westward into her barrel. What had scared her wasn't the depth of that rage, but how cold it ran. Hesse pushed the gate and it swung open, the tunnel beyond yawning darkly and swallowing the light from her lantern. She sighed again and began her long and painful descent of the stairs. None of them had imagined for a moment that Yisht would dare return after her efforts had been discovered. Quite how she had evaded the Grey Sisters watching over the convent's approaches, Hesse couldn't say. But now the woman would find herself up against Red Sisters. She must be insane to think she could reach the Shipheart, let alone escape with it. The threads had started to tremble as Hesse sought sleep that night, a vibration so slight that she hadn't been able to unravel it from her own nerves. Nona had seen something terrible two mornings before, death and dead men. Sister Kettle was involved somehow, but Nona had become so hardened to fear that whatever had happened wasn't enough to make the full link between them. Even so, it had left Hesse shaken and unable to sleep that night. This night, despite the trembling of threads, exhaustion had taken Hesse to her dreams. And the threads had jerked her from a nightmare, yanking so hard that the pain filled her sight with sparks for several moments. At the door to the Shade Chamber, Hesse stopped and leaned on her crutch.
"What's she doing here? Why this passage?"
Hesse knew that Yisht's efforts had been discovered. There had been nuns in and out of the guest chambers all through the evening of the day that Grey Class left to go ranging. They had to have discovered the shaft and set guards while measures were taken to protect the Shipheart and to challenge Shazal about the matter.
"What good am I going to do?"
Hesse shook her head and went on down the tunnel, ill at ease on the uneven surface.
"If falling over is the worst that happens to me..."
She spoke to herself to give courage. Before her, the threads that led to Yisht snaked away into darkness. 10 yards on, the threads veered into a fissure in the wall, so low that Hesse would have to abandon her crutch and crawl.
How did she...
But of course, even though the fissure was so tight that it daunted Nona, the novices had proved to Yisht she would fit through it. Hesse went to all fours on the muddy floor, or to all threes. Her withered leg would do nothing but drag. She turned around, shuffling backwards into the fissure on her behind. She pushed the lantern ahead of her, praying it wouldn't fall, praying she wouldn't get stuck, praying that Yisht had already been apprehended and wasn't already wriggling her way back through the very same gaps. The distance to the larger tunnel was perhaps 20 yards, but squeezing through it took a lifetime, and left Hessa flat on her back when she finally emerged, gasping and trembling. At the tightest spot, Hessa had seen that the rock had been scooped away, leaving strange, smooth gouges, widening the passage.
A rock worker, then?
The rarest of the elemental Marjal talents. Yisht's unique qualifications were becoming apparent. Hessa angled her lantern up. The shaft in the tunnel roof led to a boarded-over entrance. She looked down the tunnel. At any moment a knife could come winging out of that darkness and hammer into her, and Hessa's story would be over, drawn into the great story of the ancestor, a raindrop in an ocean. She should just wait for the nuns. The threads running invisible through Hessa's fingers said Yisht was not so close. But had she come alone, or did the black tunnel hold some accomplice, waiting, silent, and ready to cut throats? With a sigh, Hessa began to shuffle along the tunnel floor, inch by inch, foot by foot. The seat of her habit would be worn through.
If I survive this, Sister Mop will kill me.
She carried on, knowing that in the shadows about her lay the spot where Yisht had all but choked the life from Nona. Some minutes later she sat looking up at the entrance to the crawl tunnel that joined her passage to the one where Yisht had been digging when Nona had found her. A knotted rope dangled from the hole, presumably set when the nuns came down to investigate. Without it, Hessa would have had no chance of getting up there. Even with it, she had to touch the path in order to put away enough strength in her arms to haul herself up. She lay in the connecting crawlway, panting. She preferred not to touch the path. Its energies disquieted her, and filled her with dreams of power that fitted awkwardly at best into her ordered mind. Threadwork suited her far better, had greater subtlety to it. She enjoyed working so close to the path but not allowing its force to dominate and overmaster her. In its way, threadwork was every bit as powerful as pathwalking, closer to the wonders Abbess Glass achieved without violence or threat. Pathwalking was closer to the blunt and brutal methods of the Taxis, not that they were unique among the Sis for that. A gentle pull on Yisht's thread revealed her to be close now, but focused on some task. Hessa could almost see her, high in the rising cut she had made over long weeks of digging. She was digging once more, but pausing every now and then to touch the stone, changing it into something less resistant that fell easily beneath the swings of her pick. Hessa had never gathered such strong and detailed impressions from a thread before. She stared at her hand where the threads twined, curious. Then she felt it. The pulse of the ship heart, thrumming through the thread, thrumming through everything, even the stone itself. Eager, she wriggled on through the narrow passage, seeing the space around her fill with detail as the ship heart built upon the power within her. She saw the threads of other people's passing, Nona's, Yisht's, three nuns whom she might identify if she were to pick out their threads and examine them. By the time she reached the opening into the wider passage beyond, strewn with rubble, Hessa was starting to see threads in the rocks themselves, their lineage running back across the eons into ancient seas or the fires of the earth. She even saw the threads of the waters that had once run here, carving out these tunnels, threads that led on to rivers and oceans, up into the sky, down to percolate through dark soil and run in secret rivers. Hessa shook her head, banishing the visions, focusing on her own task. She understood Yisht's accelerating progress now. The rock worker had used her martial powers to aid her excavation, but as she grew closer to the ship heart, its aura enhanced her talents, and she was able to tunnel ever more swiftly. Hessa saw then why no thread warnings could be set around the ship heart, or the tunnels about it, as had been done with the Noiguan knife that Nona hid. The beat of the ship heart rippled out like waves, unhindered by thickness of stone, and would wash away any such workings.
Only true threads survived, and no entanglement would last for long under such conditions. Another rope dangled from the tunnel's far end, anchored on an iron spike driven into a crack in the wall. One of the nuns who came down to investigate lacked the athleticism required to make the journey without help. No Red Sister, then.
Nona! Nona!
Nona shook her head, spluttering, icy water dripping from her face.
Where? They're gathering again outside.
Jula leaned into view, water canteen in hand. Above her, the roof of the cave lay rippled in red and shadow as the sun sank behind the ridges.
You fell! You've been lying there for ages, muttering. We thought the Segrin root had got you, or the Black Cure, or both.
Nona rolled her head to look towards the entrance. Darla was there, hooded, and filling out Tarkax's sealskins pretty well, Tular in hand.
She's been letting them see her so they don't think we're escaping out the back tunnel, Ruli said.
Nona tried to get up at that, shaking the last strands of Hesse's thoughts from her mind.
There's no back tunnel,
Jula said, glowering at Ruli.
We've looked.
Let's get you up,
Ruli hooked an arm under Nona.
Wait,
Nona shouted it loud enough to draw Darla's attention from the slopes.
I was with Hesse. I mean, seeing what she's seeing. Yisht is back at the convent again. She's trying to steal the Shipheart. Hesse's going to try to stop her.
Yisht? What are you talking about?
Darla came stomping across, stepping over first Tarkax, then Ara.
How do you know this?
How can Hesse stop her?
Ruli demanded.
She'll get killed.
Jula looked shocked. Nona sat up.
She thinks she can do it. She's not scared anymore. That's why I'm not there. We only join when something really bad is happening to one of us.
Hell, she should be watching us then, Darla snorted. We've got 12 kinds of bad right outside.
Nona frowned. There are no coincidences among the Threadbound. She repeated Sister Pan's words. The nun had told them that the rhythm of their lives would start to match, and here they were, both face to face with death.
Hesse thinks she can beat Yisht?
Ruhla asked, doubtful.
Yes, but she can't do it, Nona shook her head. It's the Shipheart. It does that. It gives you power, makes you think you're indestructible. It's like the path. But Yisht will kill her.
Darla returned to peer out at the slopes, knowing that to those out there in the day's last light, she would be invisible within the cave's gloom.
Why is this happening?
Ruli helped Nona up.
I mean, why now? Why is Yisht going for the Shipheart, just as we are trapped and about to die?
We're not going to die, Nona shrugged off her range coat.
They are.
She flexed her fists and felt the flaw blades form. And what better chance would Yisht get? Half the sisters are out with Tallow to escort us back. The best of the Grey Sisters are absent too. And if news of Sister Kettle has reached the convent, then the Abbess may have sent more sisters to help. It's the ideal time to strike.
The soldiers who went looking for Tarkax's kills are back. The full 12 are on the slope again. They're getting ready to make the move.
Darla kept her voice low, but it shook with nerves. Nona started to advance.
Let me...
But Hesse's terror reached out and seized her. Nona fought the thread bond, knowing she would only be able to watch Hesse's fight, knowing her friends needed her in theirs. But the bond's strength proved too great. Her body fell, helpless, with her enemies gathering to strike. And once more, Nona became bound within Hesse's mind, a silent witness. Hesse let herself down the rope, good leg questing for the floor, the lantern dangling from her elbow on its strap, smoky and hot. She made it, and collapsed to the smooth, wet stone, the muscles in her arms burning. Lifting her lantern, she cried out in horror. Just an arm's length from her face, and unseen during her descent, Sister Flint sat with her back to the wall beneath the connecting passage. Her long neck lay at an odd angle to her shoulders, the bones making an unsightly bulge beneath dark skin, where the angle grew most acute. Her eyes stared at nothing, reflecting the lantern's flame, and a thin red line of drool ran from the corner of her mouth.
"Go back!"
Nona spoke into the clamour of Hessa's thoughts and went unheard. Hessa looked towards the entrance to Yisht's shaft, glowing with the distant light of the assassin's lantern. The sound of pick blows and crashing rock echoed back and out into the main tunnel. She returned her gaze to Sister Flint. She had been a Red Sister, as fine a warrior as Sweet Mercy could produce, and Yisht had killed her.
"Go back!"
Nona shouted it, but struggled to be heard against the beat of the Shipheart's pulse. Hessa raised her hands. She could see the threads that she had drawn from Yisht hanging in her fingers, golden, silver, scarlet, and black. Pull on this golden thread, and a stream of memories would come rushing to flood her with the woman's blood-stained history. Pull it far enough, and she would see the ice, see Yisht even before her memory began, swaddled in furs and innocence. Pull on that scarlet one, and she could change the woman's mind. Pull hard enough, and any opinion she might hold would be overturned, however firm it might be. Pull this silver thread, the one that anchored her to her soul, and the woman would come undone. Hessa knew she could do it. She held Yisht's life in her hands, and the Shipheart gave her all the power and clarity she needed. Hessa edged to the shaft, scraping herself across the rubble, cutting her hands, tearing her habit. Dark splatters amongst the broken rock caught the light of Hessa's lantern and returned it. She rolled and touched a finger to one glistening patch.
Blood!
Yisht hadn't escaped unharmed from her encounter with Sister Flint then. A tremendous crash echoed down the shaft, and moments later rock dust billowed out, obliterating Hessa's vision, making her cough. Silence. Then, as the dust began to settle, the sound of loose rock being pulled away. Hessa shuffled the last foot and peered around to see up along the steep slope of the narrow slot that Yisht had carved. The whole passage glowed. Light, from some source far brighter than any lantern, caught the last of the dust and turned it into gold. At first Hessa thought Yisht must have broken through to the surface, but as the dust continued to settle, she saw the woman's blurred black outline, and on every side the light shafted around her, as if a miniature sun were before her, level with her waist. And if it were a sun, then it was the Hope, rather than Abeth's red star, a young sun full of white and gold. And the heat, even at this distance, it made Hessa sweat.
"She'll never get out with it."
Hessa squinted against the brightness. The light changed, shadows ran and swung, the quality of the Shipheart's pulse altered. Yisht turned to the side, her fingers red around the Shipheart's glowing sphere, her bones dark within the rosy haze of her flesh.
"Leave!"
Nona shouted it at Hessa, and for a moment she thought that she might have noticed. Hessa watched, just one eye at the very edge of the cut, her resolve blown away like focus mist in an ice wind. Yisht would never get out with the Shipheart. She started to pull away. Yisht held the Shipheart before her and thrust it towards the wall. The air whined as if a thousand mosquitoes had gathered to feast, and the rock flowed away as though it were liquid mud. Yisht stepped forward into the void.
"No!"
Hessa understood now. Yisht might be a Marjal half-blood, or even a prime, but her rockwork was only sufficient to aid her in digging,
weakening the stone ready for the pick's swing, or allowing a slow and silent start to the shaft she had sunk beneath her guest quarters. Perhaps it also gave her intuition as to where the tunnels and fissures ran. But as she had come closer to the shipheart, her skills had been magnified, allowing the last yards of the cut to be hewn away in just a few hours. And now, actually holding the shipheart, the rocks moved to her will. Hessa had no idea what such a gift must be costing Yisht. There was a reason that the shipheart lay buried, rather than in the hands of a nun. But whatever it cost her, it also afforded a Marjal rock worker their escape. She could tunnel out, closing the shaft behind her and emerging at some prearranged location, no doubt to be met by Sherzal's troops. Hessa reached her arm around the edge of the cut and pulled on all Yisht's threads at once. The warrior came flying backwards out of the hole she had created. The opposite wall arrested her motion with a crunch that made Hessa wince. For a moment she felt guilty. She hadn't meant to injure the woman. Then ridiculous, knowing exactly what Yisht would do to her, given a chance. In the moment after that, Yisht's thoughts and memories flooded her, drawn out when Hessa pulled on the golden thread of her being. Images washed over Nona, trapped at the back of Hessa's mind. One image, burning with importance, caught her attention, and Nona seized it as it passed. The amulet she'd taken from Yisht, the sigil black against a tide of moments, recollections, sensations. And with the amulet's image came understanding. A sigil of negation, fashioned with vanishingly rare talent by a master of the art a century before. Yisht's key to the defences on the Abbess's house. Her secondary mission, to claim the secrets there, now abandoned. Pressed to any enchantment, the amulet would erase the magic, or at the very least, disrupt it. Yisht unfolded herself slowly, the light from the shipheart breaking around her as she straightened to expose it.
"Kill her!" Nona shouted. "Quick!"
This close to the shipheart, and with threads drawn from Yisht's own blood, she could snap the silver tie that bound Yisht's spirit, and the woman's warm flesh would topple to the ground, empty. Hessa worked quickly, the deft fingers of her mind sorting and plucking the threads that connected her to Yisht.
"Put down."
Hessa only mouthed the words, but Yisht found herself lowering the shipheart to the ground, not against her will, but because her will had changed.
"End her!"
Nona knew killers. Yisht was a killer. Hessa was not. The killer always has the edge.
"Don't give her a moment!"
Yisht raised a hand, and above Hessa a thickness of rock fractured away from the ceiling. There was no time to react, no pain, no memory of the impact. Just the knowledge that the world had turned upon its side, that the lantern oil was flaring somewhere around her legs, and that she now saw Yisht through a single eye full of blood. Nothing hurt, and that worried Hessa most of all. Yisht approached down the cut, a slim knife in her hand, her gait uncertain, as if her collision with the wall had broken something inside.
"Personal touch."
Hessa thought the words, but her lips scarcely moved, and her breath sputtered out wetly. Nona threw every ounce of her will against the bond that tied her to Hessa, but all that happened was that the world started shaking, as if Yisht had decided against the knife and raised all her earth magics to crush her foe.
"Nona!"
A slap that made her cheek blaze.
"Nona!"
screamed at her face, full of desperation. Nona didn't open her eyes, they were already open. But she started seeing through them again. Darla was shaking her.
"Wake up! They're coming! All of them!
Buy me a minute!"
She gasped the words out and Darla dropped her in shock.
"What?"
1 minute, Nona sat. I need to help Hessa.
Her shadow lay before her, thrown by the descending sun, stretching out to the rear of the cave where it joined the general gloom. Nona made a fist and extended one finger from it, sheathed in a single flaw blade.
Wait! We're sending her out!
Darla shouted from the cave entrance. She ducked back.
If they're going to kill us anyway, why are they so keen we send you out?
So I don't get killed in any fighting. Once sword starts swinging, anything can happen.
Nona started to cut at her shadow, slicing it away from below her feet.
Ah, gods damn it, that hurts.
She had known her blades cut shadow. That lesson had been taught to her at the academy. She hadn't known that cutting her own shadow would hurt as much as cutting her own flesh.
What?
Ruli stared in horror at the ragged edge of Nona's shadow and the strange twisting of the light about the gap.
How will that stop them? Not them. Her.
Nona slashed again, a long tearing motion screaming out the agony of it. Behind her, Darla scooped up Ara's stiff body and carried her towards the cave mouth.
We had to subdue her with poison, she called out.
What are you doing?
Jula joined Ruli, dagger trembling in her grip. Whether she was talking to Nona or to Darla was hard to say.
I'm breaking rules.
Nona threw herself onto her severed shadow before it could escape into the greater dark, and then hurled herself back at Hessa, terrified that she would be too late, terrified that she would throw herself along the threads of the bond forged in such sorrow and so long ago, only to find a nothingness, just the vacant space that her friend had once occupied in the world. The point of Yisht's knife waited just a finger's width from Hessa's eye. Yisht herself sat on the rocks just before her. In her other hand, Shirzal's assassin held the shipheart, a blue-white ball of wonder, its surface a multi-layered thing across which floated the ghosts of forms both familiar and unknown. She kept it pressed to a rip in her tunic, the flesh beneath torn and bloody.
I'm not given to cruelty, child.
Nona realized that Yisht was speaking.
But you reached into my mind, and a violation like that cannot go unanswered.
Hessa could smell meat burning, and knew it was her, but still no pain reached her. The knife at her eye terrified her, but she had drawn her head back as far as she could, and still the point advanced. Nona found herself lost, an impotent observer, her plans ridiculous. Somewhere she had hands, and those hands were full of shadow, but her ambition to draw that unleashed shadow through to Hessa lay so far beyond her talent she had no idea where to start.
Help me, Hessa!
And where Nona's orders and demands had gone unheard and unheeded, her cry for help caught her friend's attention, even beneath the heel of Yisht's revenge.
How? Help me draw it through!
She tried to show Hessa what she needed.
Easy.
Hessa felt herself drifting away, beyond pain, beyond struggle. She heard the ancestors' song, many-voiced, and more beautiful than anything she had ever imagined possible. Even so, her friend had asked for help. With the shipheart so close, it seemed simplicity itself to take the dark threads from Nona's clumsy fists, beating ineffectually at the walls between them, and to pull those threads through the bond they shared.
We're Giljan's children.
The thought rolled across the smoothness of her mind as the ancestor's song grew louder.
Sisters of the cage. Stay.
Nona tried to hold on to Hessa. She could feel her leaving but had no sense of where she might be going or how to follow. The point of Yisht's blade traced a hot line down the side of Hessa's face, and in that moment of hurt, the shadows suddenly swirled, rising from the ground so fast and thick and black that the broken stones rattled with their passage. Nona's shadow broke from Hesse's and threw itself at Yisht like an extension of her will, rending, tearing, screaming its hatred in registers above hearing. From the fading, blood-soaked view that Hesse's eye provided, Nona saw Yisht fall back, open wounds torn across her, shredding her jacket. She twisted and staggered away, thrusting the ship heart at Nona's shadow to ward it off. Nona saw her shadow grow huge and monstrous, as if it were the shadow of her true self, barbed with hatred, swollen with rage. Yisht stumbled back, retreating up the shaft she had spent so many hours and so much sweat cutting into the bedrock. The shaft that led nowhere and offered no escape.
"Coming! Wake up! I'm awake!"
She opened her eyes.
"Nona!"
Jula, reaching out, her face without hope and full of goodbyes. Outside, the tramp of many feet approaching. An arrow glanced from the wall and rattled on into the cave. Nona shook her head, rising smoothly into a crouch. The rage she had needed now filled her from toe to head, her body vibrating with it.
"I was born for killing. The gods made me to ruin."
She batted aside an arrow and snatched another from the air before it reached Jula's neck. She tucked it into her belt. Nona launched herself into motion, driving up and forward, aimed at the bright entrance where tall figures crowded like the shadows of teeth in the cave's open mouth. Ara lay at their feet, a helpless offering. Arrows shot blindly into the gloom, ricocheted from the walls, clattering around her on the stone floor. Behind her, she heard Darla shout as the novice found her courage and defiance. Something sped past Nona's ear while she closed the distance to the enemy, overtaking her, spinning and scattering the sun's last rays. Clara's throwing star, released from Ruli's considerably more skilled fingers, found the face of the foremost soldier. As Nona's feet drove her forward across the uneven floor of the cave, she let her anger, every piece of hurt and rage and despair, throw her mind towards the path. Nona had no trouble gathering what she needed. She had felt Hesse leave, felt her sweet and clever soul join something larger and more distant as streams find the ocean. Hesse had gone, her last mile not limped or shuffled, not even walked upon her own 2 feet, but run. Hesse had not feared dying, but Nona feared living without her. As she hit the path, Nona made no attempt to slow herself or find the balance she had always sought. Instead, she used her speed as she had on the blade path, letting rage propel her where serenity had held her back. Riding the twisting impossibility of the path, shooting through the convolutions and relying on instinct to keep her on course, whatever came. At the same time that Nona's mind ran the path, her feet drove her towards the soldiers crowding through the cave mouth. She angled herself towards the wall, leapt at it, and kicked off, gaining height. Her speed and the unexpected nature of the attack, coming at the day-blind men from the darkness of the cave, took her over the points of their swords. Her target, quicker than the rest, managed to raise his blade, but she twisted about it, her movements in the physical world somehow complementing and complemented by her simultaneous running of the path. Nona flew, arms extended, and hit the man in the face with both fists. Her flaw blades, 6 inches long and spiking from her knuckles, gave her the purchase to leapfrog him, bringing her feet to his shoulders and springing away, her blade slicing clear as she jumped. A sword hissed towards her while she sailed over the last of the soldiers. She managed to swing her arms wide before her as it cut across her path. There was a moment's contact, a bright metallic sound, and she came to ground tumbling across the rocky slope, with sections of neatly divided longsword clattering down around her. Nona fell from the path at the same moment as she hit the ground. The impact against rough stone could have broken bones, at the least torn flesh, and left her too injured to put up much of a fight. Instead, wrapped in the path's power, Nona left a channel of shattered stone in her wake and rolled to her feet, crouched in the fighting stance. She didn't know how many steps she had remained on the path for, but there were many of them, the energies building inside her with each one. Past the 10th or 12th step, Nona had noticed that energy was bleeding off her, and that each new step built her reserves a little more slowly than the one before, but still, the build-up was inexorable and exhilarating. Such a magnificent feeling, in fact, that had she not fallen then, she would never have voluntarily left the path. Crouched there, with the soldier still turning to follow the line of her attack, Nona knew that the impact with the ground had saved her life. Even now she struggled to own what the path had given her. The raw energy of it smoked from her skin. All about her the rock trembled, and the broken fragments, shattered loose by her passage, now started to rise, each making slow revolutions as it lifted from the ground. Nona opened her mouth, and the scream that came from it was larger than her body. A hammer that smote the rock, cut down the soldiers like wheat before the scythe, and rattled away down every gully, even reaching out to smite the distant walls of the spine and come echoing back. The scream tore her lungs and throat, spattering bright crimson blood across the rocks before her. Nona felt herself separate into broken pieces, each an image of herself, resonances in time as the power she struggled to contain vibrated through the stuff of reality. Ara had been broken into three pieces by the path energy she used on the day Zol came to the convent. She had struggled to pull herself together. Nona stood in nine parts, some captured in the moments as she had tumbled across the rock, others held around her, some just rising into the crouch, others lifting from it. At the same time as Nona's borrowed power threatened to scatter her across the slope, something stabbed at her chest. A cold, sucking thing lanced into her, a hungry void siphoning off some of what she had taken. Nona knew that in a heartbeat each piece of her would fly apart, torn one from the next by the path's energy. She needed to pull herself back into one unified whole, to find a common thread that would bind them together. All she could think of, all that was in her mind as she watched the soldier she had jumped from, still in the act of falling, his head a ruin, was that she ached to kill the rest of them. It was enough. With a snap like some deep bone clicking into place, Nona stood whole, the path's energies owned, bound into her flesh, armoring her, strengthening her. All around her the rocks, once suspended, began to fall. Nona tore at her breast where the coldness somehow knifed through her newfound strength. Her habit shredded, and Yisht's amulet fell from the torn inner pocket. Nona batted it away before the iron sigil of negation could drink any more of her power. She slowed the turning of the world, dug deeper into the moment than she had ever been. The falling stones seemed to crawl towards the ground, and when she launched herself at the tall axeman who stood closest to her, she hurtled through the air fast as any spear was ever thrown. Her cry of rage had set him falling, but she didn't give him time to hit the ground. Nona moved among the mailed bodies of her foes, spinning and swinging, opening disastrous wounds wherever her hands passed. Shields and chainmail offered no resistance to her blades. With the path power bound into her, muscle and bone, a well-placed kick could shatter a grown man's hip through his armor. Her blood sang with the violence. Ducking beneath the swing of a sword, she clawed through a woman's knee and threw herself onto the largest of their number, a 7-foot warrior thick with muscle. Nona sprang up the height of him. The punch she delivered to his throat held such force that her arm passed through his neck, scattering the small bones of his spine in a crimson splatter. The red work of killing carried on. At some point in the midst of it, Nona took the arrow from her belt and stuck it into the eye of the man who had fired it at her. Nona had hidden her secret so long, worked so hard to be normal, but the truth lay all around her in crimson arcs of gore written out across the rocks. She had come to Sweet Mercy, bearing the title murderer, and had come to that deed from a cage where her first act of slaughter had placed her. Even before that, the children of the village had seen her for what she was, a fox among hens. "Billam Smithson tried to hurt me," she had said. "This was inside him." She must have been all of 3 or 4 years old. She twisted away from the lazy descent of two swords and a thrust spear, dividing between a forest of legs, slicing into the meat of a thigh, opening muscle and arteries, scoring the bone. The novices, the nuns, the abbess herself, would all know her now for the monster she was, a rabid animal unfit for the company of decent people, holy or otherwise. An axe scythed towards her, the wielder white-faced and desperate, more likely to wound a friend than to connect with Nona. And yet, by luck, he caught her on the turn with almost no time to act. Her blades divided the hilt into tumbling sections that she dived through. The axe head flew free and bedded itself in the chest of the woman whose knee Nona had ruined, who was still in the act of collapsing. The men who had been at the fore of the rush into the cave now returned to a scene of carnage. Apart from the four emerging into the light, only one soldier stood uninjured. The four paused, an ill-advised hesitation that allowed Nona to leap at the face of their companion and bear him screaming to the rocks amid the wreckage of his comrades. When Nona lifted her head, gore dripping from her hair, the four survivors took a step back. Darla's Tuller came down in an inexpert but devastating swing, nearly beheading the leftmost of the men and embedding the blade deep in his sternum. Dula appeared with her arm around the shoulders of the next, screaming and stabbing furiously at his neck. Ruli felled another of them by smashing a rock, two-handed, into the back of his knee. The last man started to run, angling away across the slopes. Nona plucked a blood-slick spear from its fallen owner and threw it. The path energy was burning out of her limbs, and the spear fell heavy. Even so, it flew true and took him between the shoulder blades, carrying him to the ground. Nona stood, panting, blood dripping from her hands, blood in her hair, the taste of it in her mouth, blood running down her legs, blood cloaking her habit as if she were already a red sister. She looked up, her gaze travelling slowly across the twitching of the injured and the stillness of the dead, dreading to see the condemnation in her friends' faces. The three of them stood over the bodies of the soldiers they had brought down. Jula, with her mousy hair wild and sticking up at all angles, her face, neck and shoulders spattered with gore. Tarkax's knife glistening in her hand. Ruli raised her face, the rock in her hands dark with gore. She had shattered the soldier's head when he fell, and the splash of it decorated her in scarlet. Darla freed the Tular with a wet wrench and held it above her head. All three of them stood for a moment, panting. Then, as one, they roared out their victory and, raising her hands, Nola howled it out with them. She stood, her heart pounding, eyes full of tears, her chest full of that strange mixture of sorrow and exultation that she could never explain, a feeling that words could neither shape nor own. It took her a moment to remember Hessa. Her death didn't feel real yet. Nona stood there, casting no shadow, and found she could feel nothing for her friend. Some emotions are like that, too big to be seen from within, like the ice patterns written across empty miles, which make sense only from a great height. She slumped,
staggering as weariness caught up with her. She would find that distance in time, and there would be sorrow enough to make the dead weep. And she feared it. Nona went across to Ara, who lay by the edge of the slope, rope around her wrists, where one of the soldiers had started to bind her. They hadn't trusted the poison to keep her immobile, but it was still doing a good job. Nona met Ara's eyes as she sliced away her bonds. "They're all dead, Ara." Nona looked down at herself, still red with slaughter. She couldn't bring herself to speak of Hesse yet. She wanted to set off for the convent, to run all the way, to kill Yisht with her own hands.
"Some are just wounded."
Ruli came across, empty-handed now. Nona became aware of groaning behind her as Ruli spoke.
"We should do something about that."
Darla raised her bloody tular and eyed it speculatively.
"They're no threat,"
Jula said, the sleeve of her habit red and dripping.
"We need to get the others moving. Then we can go."
The slope stank of death, an ugly smell. "Let them be," Nona shook her head.
"Help me with Ara."
She made to stand. As she moved, the gleam of sunlight on metal further down the gully caught her eye. The last edge of the sunset still caught the devil's spine, and its light beaded on the smooth curve of a steel shoulder plate as it came into view. The man walking towards them was armored from head to toe, lobstered in interlocking steel, his helm a cylinder faced by perforated doors. Nona was amazed anyone could walk in such a weight of metal.
"Get Ara back into the cave!"
she shouted. At least five of the soldiers still had breath in them, though perhaps none would last the night. She crouched by a woman, a scar-faced veteran, her breathing shallow. The point of an axe head bedded in her ribs where it had driven the links of her chainmail into the wound, and shook her roughly.
"Who is that?"
"Can't you tell?"
the woman grimaced.
"Wait until he gets closer."
"It's Raymel Taxis."
Nona understood. Only a gerent could carry such armor. She advanced down the slope, skidding on loose stone, into the gully where a small stream gurgled. When Raymel drew closer, Nona once again got that shock of realization as her eyes understood the scale of him. The sword he drew from over his shoulder must have been 6 foot in length, and heavier than her.
"It always pays to bide your time with witches."
Raymel set the point of his sword upon the ground.
"Perhaps I should have brought more soldiers. I would have preferred you captured, so we could spend a while together. But my father keeps a tight rein on his troops, and he felt that you're not worth breaking a promise to the Emperor over. Not this year, anyway." "I disagreed."
His voice was as deep and rich as Nona remembered. But beneath it, just at the edge of hearing, it seemed that she heard other tones, other voices whispering the words, voices that were older, crueler, and more hungry. Nona backed off, matching Raymel's advance.
"I thought you were a fighter, little girl."
3 more strides.
"You seemed keen enough at the Kaltis, both times."
Nona continued to back away.
"Not so brave now you've spent your magic."
The trailing tip of Raymel's sword rattled through the loose stones by the stream, scoring the bedrock with a discordant noise. Nona blinked. The ghostly echo of the path hung in the darkness behind her eyes, but it lay beyond her reach, like a spent passion. She might be able to reach for it by the next morning, but not any time soon. And her flaw blades, she had seen that they barely scratched the man, warded as he was by the devils that shared his skin. She kept backing away. Raymel stopped, advancing.
"Trying to lead me away from your nest, Mother Bird?
He turned his head to stare at the cave and the body sprawled beneath it. Darla vanished into the cave mouth, Ara in her arms. A moment later and she would have been out of sight.
All this?
He raised a gauntleted hand to the steel plates over his neck where she had cut him years ago.
Was over another nestling. I had to find out her name after I got better. Sida. A dirty little peasant, just like you. That's not something a Taxus heir dies over.
He beckoned Nona closer.
Are you still angry about her? I bet you are. You should come and show me.
Nona snatched up a rounded stone from the stream and kept backing away.
No?
Raymel paused.
I'm glad she died. My regret is only that I didn't get to do it, and in my own time. But Father just had her hanged, and quickly. Not one for scandals, my father.
He sheathed his sword and held his arms wide, as if daring her to attack.
Do you remember how she screamed?
At the back of her mind, where Nona had expected anger to flare, an image of Sida rose instead. Her broad face, with its mixture of timid and friendly. If she had been here, she would be treating the wounded, the soldiers that Nona had torn open. Sida had wanted to mend, not to break. Nona took another step back. Raymel shrugged, his armor squealing in protest.
It looks as if some of your friends won't be able to run away as fast as you can.
He started to march towards the cave, striding at a pace most men would have to jog to keep up with. Nona threw the stone. It bounced off Raymel's helm. He didn't turn.
Ruli! Jula!
Nona screamed.
Darla! He's coming! He's coming for you!
Fear ran through her, cold water through the marrow of her bones. For the first time in an age, she felt the chill of the ice wind, ragged now as it lost its strength, but still icy now that she had no range coat.
He's coming!
She didn't know what to do. She wanted them to run, but if they left Ara, Zol, and Tarkax, then Raymel would make the gullies ring with their screams. Darla appeared at the cave mouth, Tarkax's tular in her hand, still sticky with blood. Her jaw dropped as she took in the size of Raymel, striding across the corpses. Nona cast her exhaustion aside and broke into a sprint. She caught Raymel 5 yards before the cave and threw herself upon him. Leaping and reaching as high as she could, she drove her flaw blades into the small of his back. One set punctured the steel plate armor, the other skittered across, leaving bright lines scored into the metal. Dragging herself higher, Nona reached up, slashing with all her strength to lodge her second set of blades just below his shoulder blades. Raymel bellowed and began to turn. If the blades were hurting him, though, it was nothing more than scratches. There was no blood gushing, or even leaking from the slot she had driven through his plate mail. She climbed higher as he turned, cutting and hauling her way up, an ice climber sinking her axes. A great hand reached back for her, large enough to wrap about Nona's head and crush it like a nut. Releasing her grip, she grabbed a thumb and finger, each so thick in its gauntlet that she couldn't close her own fingers about them. Hanska's speed enabled her to climb his wrist and reach the iron summit of his elbow before the grasping hand could close on the air where she had been. Locking one leg about his elbow, Nona slashed at Raymel's visor, putting every ounce of her strength into two blows, a rising left-to-right slash, and, as she fell away, a descending right-to-left slash. The obdurate steel resisted her blades until they met the first of the many perforations through which the warrior saw the world. Then, tearing in, The floor blades managed to cut from one hole to the next several times before jolting out to score the surface once again. Nona turned in the air and landed on her feet, stumbling immediately and sprawling backwards across an injured soldier, clutching his stomach wound. From her place on the ground, she saw that the crisscrossing of her blades had cut out a number of diamond-shaped sections of the visor, and she could now see one glaring eye, the cheekbone below, and part of Raymel's nose. But his flesh had resisted her blades better than the steel, showing just red scratch marks where his face should have been cut into shreds. Raymel Taxis's great sword dropped like a thunderbolt, dividing the man that Nona had tripped over. She rolled clear as the blade hammered into the rock. Her speed was leaving her now, spent in too many acts of extravagant swiftness. Raymel straightened, scything his sword across the slope. Nona tried to dig into the moment, but the gaps had grown slim, and the spaces between heartbeats, once so cavernous, now squeezed her out. She leapt the cutting edge with just an inch to spare. Where Nona was tiring, Raymel seemed possessed of boundless stamina, howling a chilling mix of glee and hatred as he pursued her. Nona grabbed a discarded sword and, running beneath another swing, hacked at Raymel's leg. It was like hewing a stone pillar. The sword jolted from her hands, and the shock transmitted along the blade sent white agonies lancing up her wrists. The gleaming arc of Raymel's next swing held Nona's attention, and a kick caught her a glancing blow, coming from the side while she watched the sword. The impact spun her, and she fell among the bodies, clutching the hot, wet pain in her side, broken ribs at the least.
"You're going to wish you hadn't done that," she snarled at him. "But not for very long."
She tried to leap up at him, furious, but for once her body betrayed her, too broken and filled with too much hurt to obey. Raymel towered above her, lifting his foot to stamp down on her legs. Nona raised her arm in futile defense, and as she did, something small and spinning tore through the empty space above her. It vanished through the gap she had made in Raymel's visor and thunked into his eye. With mad screams, Darla, Ruli, and Jula came tearing down the slope, whirling stolen swords above their heads. Raymel, howling, dropped his own blade and raised a huge hand to his face. The three novices thrust and hacked at every part of him, from his ankles to his chest. Nona crawled clear of the melee, sliding down the gore-slicked slope, holding her ribs. Raymel weathered the sword storm. He spun around amid the clatter and clang, swinging his left arm. Darla took the main force, his forearm slamming into her belly and lifting her off the ground. She landed yards away with a horrifying thump. Ruli and Jula both knocked from their feet, tumbled down towards Nona. Iron-shod fingertips closed on the point of the throwing star and pulled it from the ruin of Raymel's eye. He flipped the weapon away. Behind the intact section of visor, the scarlet eye devil-owned stared at the sprawl of novices, the hatred so intense that it seemed a physical thing, pressing on them, both burning and icy at the same time. Nona seized a spear and rolled to her back. She would die facing her enemy, weapon in hand, not crawling away. Close by, Ruli lay dazed, her head bloody. Jula rolled over beside Ruli, her wrist at a sick-making angle, and took her knife in her off-hand, eyes blazing. And Raymel stood over them, all in shadow now with the setting of the sun, his huge sword recovered and poised to end three of them in a single slash. From the darker shadow of the cave mouth, a small figure broke, tottering and awkward on stiff legs. Arabella Jotsis, her golden hair in disarray, staggered weaponless down the slope towards them. Nona wanted to scream at her to run, but it was too late. Too late for anything. At least Ara might die with them, in a bloody moment, and escape Raymel's cruelties. Some warrior instinct, perhaps just sharp hearing, made Raymel glance back. But seeing a stumbling child, he quickly returned his attention to the victims before him. Ara tripped and fell most of the last few yards, jerking her arms overhead only at the last moment. And in that moment, Nona recognized the power of the path shuddering there in Ara's empty palms. Ara clapped both to the giant's backplate, and the energy she had gathered, finding her serenity in the worst possible situation, pulsed into Raymel Taxus. The raw stuff of creation detonated against Raymel, as it had once detonated in the fight dummy that had suffered Ara's wrath in place of Zol. A light lit within Raymel's armor, and with a violent and deafening crack, things blew apart. Nona shook the echoes from her head and looked up to find that although Ara had been blown off her feet, Raymel had not. He stood in the fractured remains of his plate armor, 500 pounds of bleeding muscle stacked 3 yards tall. The livid purple mark that reached up the side of his neck continued down across the broadness of his chest, swirling out into patterns that remembered the complexity and form of sigils. On his side and below his shoulder, great patches of scarlet scar tissue, as if from old burns, seemed to hold leering faces in their ridges and hollows. Flying pieces of his armor had torn the odd furrow through his flesh, but, by and large, he stood unharmed. The force of the detonation had blown his helm clear, and he stared at her, with one eye ruined and dripping, the other a scarlet window into the mind of a devil. Below them hung an echo of the smile he'd worn when he broke Sida. In that moment, the warrior in Nona roared again, finding a last touch of speed, a last gasp of strength. She threw the spear she'd been clinging to. It hit hard enough to bury a couple of inches of the blade between Raymel's ribs, enough to keep it there, standing proud. Rising with the throw, Nona tumbled between Raymel's legs, plucking a discarded knife from the ground between them and slashing at the back of his knee, where the armor plate hung on one rivet, exposing flesh. She cut deep, slicing tendon and muscle. Unbalanced, Raymel fell with a roar. Ruli and Jula scrambled clear with no time to spare as he fell, crashing between them. The head of Nona's spear erupted from Raymel's back as the butt of the haft hit the ground when he fell, arms out to take the impact. Nona scrambled up Raymel's pale and naked back as the huge man surged to hands and knees with a muted roar. She plunged the knife between his shoulders, again and again. The devils beneath his skin screamed and surged, strange and alien forms moving beneath his flesh. Nona sliced at them, like serpents beneath a rug. The blood that spurted from those wounds came scalding and stinking, staining her hands, filling her with a black agony beyond comprehension. But her rage proved larger than any hurt, and still the steel in her fist rose and fell. Nona rode her enemy, her howls a counterpoint to his bellows. And still, despite the ruin of his back, Raymel turned and rolled, reaching for Nona, the spear through his belly snapping against the ground. She scrabbled away on her back, but one huge hand closed around her leg below the knee. No! Nona drove her dagger through his wrist, fear warring with her anger now. Die!
I can't die!
He kept his grip, spitting blood, and drew her towards him.
They won't let me!
His red eye met her black ones, and she knew, in that moment, that no wound would stop him.
I can't die!
In the last heartbeat remaining to her, Nona spotted Yisht's amulet, gleaming blackly between two rocks almost within reach. She lunged for it, arms out before her. But for the blood, she would never have made it. Raymel's gore-slick hands slipped down her leg from knee to ankle, and with the tips of her fingers she snagged the iron sigil.
I can't die!
Raymel loomed above her on all fours. Nona sat up,
and pressed the black sigil to his forehead with her thumb.
"Yes, you can!"
Her other hand pulled the knife from his wrist and drove it up beneath his chin, hilt deep. Raymel roared. Nona saw the blade gleaming behind his teeth. The sigil of negation seared into his forehead, corroding, falling apart, a red mist rising around it, and with a chorus of screams the devils fled his flesh. The grip on her ankle slackened, and Nona rolled clear, twisting her knee as she yanked her leg free. Behind her, Raymel Taxus collapsed, twitching to the ground, arms sprawled, the rocks about him drenched with crimson.
Epilogue. It is important when killing a nun to ensure that you bring an army of sufficient bravery. For when Sister Cage of the Sweet Mercy Convent steps onto the battlefield, courage is often found to be in short supply. She came from the Undercaves, and the Rock of Faith shuddered to its base as if deep in the blindness of its roots, the rock itself had given birth to her. She rose amid the convent buildings, behind the great dome of the Ancestor. The youngest of the novices were still within their dormitory, a single ancient nun seated at the door. They watched at their windows, open-mouthed. Years ago, before some of these girls were brought wet and screaming into the world, a different set of novices had watched Sister Cage first arrive at Sweet Mercy. There is little of that child to be seen in Sister Cage. She stands shadowless in the torch-ringed courtyard, and in one moment the novices know that the stories are true. She glances their way, each eye utterly black, as if that missing shadow had been poured into both until it filled her skull. A distant scream rings out past the dome of the Ancestor, deep among the pillars. Sister Cage turns her head. She is deadly pale, strange in her beauty, her hair jet and jagged, cut close. Her habit is faded, stained, trailing ragged tails of cloth, but it is still red, and as she runs she looks like death descending from some high place. The Pilarthi stood between the pillars, a loose halo around the place where Sister Thorn lay in her blood. Clara Gomel stood above the fallen nun that once and long ago she had in this place called friend. It seemed that the world revolved about them, the pillars spinning about the axis that stood between Thorn and Clara, as all the stars in heaven revolve around a single point of darkness. Clara Gomel opened her mouth to speak, and said nothing. For the years rob us of the words for such moments, making each truth too bitter for the tongue, too heavy to be spoken. She stood among strangers, before the body of a sister. Sister Cage drew her sword as she ran towards the first of the Pilarthi. Sister Tallow had pressed the weapon's hilt back into her hand less than an hour before. A long blade, thin, carrying a slight curve, its edge cruel enough to cut silence and make it scream. She didn't seek the path, uttered no battle cry, made no challenge. She spun through a group of six, and the clash of her sword upon the metal collar of the last of their number announced her arrival. Sister Cage stopped, head down, sword trailing at her side, a crimson line stretching out across the rock from its point. Before her, dozens of mercenaries turned their heads to see what threat faced them, and behind her, six bodies collapsed to the stone, some not yet realizing they were dead, for death had come among them so swiftly. Out in the convent compound, Bittell rang out. Where Sister Thorn offered protection, Sister Cage offered only war, utter, and without quarter. The years when they had called her the shield were long past. Sweet Mercy would open her doors. Everyone who drew breath within its walls would issue forth, from youngest novice to ancient nun. Sister Cage lifted her face to her enemies, night-eyed, a narrow beauty among the scars. Half a smile that promised her to be more than a little in love with death, and invited them to dance. Bows creaked among the Pilarthi ranks, spears were lifted, knuckles whitened on the hilts of sword and axe. A hawk-eyed archer, her cheek torn and bloody where Thorn's throwing star had sliced past, took aim at the new nun's face. They knew her by many names, the Pilarthi did, but Cage held as much fear as any other. Cage, she would not release you. You would not escape. The tales said she made her first kill in the same year she learned to walk. They said she tore a boy apart with her bare hands and took his heart to show her mother. Sister Cage found the torn-faced archer among the crowded strength of the Pilarthi, and a knowing passed between them, between the archer's cold gray eyes and the sister's black orbs. The arrow fell with a clatter. The archer turned without a word and began to push her way back past the warriors of her clan. To her left, another turned, a man thick with muscle, the names of his forefathers inked in runes along his arms. Two of those he pushed aside turned and ran with him. A trickle became a flood. The Pilarthi left the scores of their dead still scattered or heaped where Sister Thorn had killed them. They ran, pursued by a terror they couldn't name, something larger than the sister who stood behind them, but perhaps as small as the disappointment in her eyes when they turned to flee. Clara waited beside Ara as Nona strode towards them through the pillars. In the heavens above, the first crimson stars dared open their eyes. "Is she dead?" "How are you here?" Clara ignored the question. "You weren't supposed to be here. How did you know? And even then, how did you get here?" "Is she dead?" Nona rushed forward, pushing Clara back, away from Ara, who was still coiled about the spear. She knelt, reaching out to touch the spread gold of her hair. "Ara, you should never have let me go." The words sputtered from Clara as if she were hurt, as if it were her wrapped around a spear. "You had me bound, guilty. You should have let them drown me." "I wouldn't do that to a friend." Nona set her fingers to Ara's neck, seeking a pulse, the smallest of groans, the smallest tremble of a hand. A short laugh burst from Clara, sounding as much like pain as mirth. "They all think you're the big bad, the church's hammer, Cage the shadowless. You're still a child, Nona. You run into everything heart first, expecting what? You didn't understand how people work when the abbess brought you here, a dirty-footed peasant. You didn't understand when she sent you away, and you don't understand now. People lie, Nona. They steal, they cheat, they're unfaithful. People hurt you, they let you down, they sell you out. It doesn't mean I have to be like that." Nona stared up at Clara, who flinched, guilty before those black eyes. "We have a whole church built on ancestors." She waved an arm at the dome. "Family, dead family." She took Ara's hand in hers. "You choose your friends. If you're going to worship dead people you didn't choose, then perhaps the bonds of friendship shouldn't be so easily broken. No?" Clara shook her head. "You're a fool, Nona Grey. Are you going to kill me now, or let someone else do it?" "Ara could live. If we get her to Sister Rose, now." Nona glanced back towards the convent. They were coming. The old sisters and the young girls. Sister Thorn had vowed to protect them, Sister Cage to fight alongside them. Clara waved her hand at the distant nuns, exasperated. "Let them take her. I don't care. I didn't come for Ara. She was just in the way. Nona released Ara's hand with a squeeze and stood.
I've missed you, Clara. It's been too many years.
Clara glanced out across the plateau.
We were children, Nona. Children make and break friendships all the time. It's not important. This, what we're doing now, this is important. It's about sides in the great game that's being played, and you're on the wrong one, the losing one. You should change sides.
Nona shook her head.
I'm not playing, and I've always been on your side, Clara. You've just not properly understood it.
Clara looked down at Ara.
I wanted her to run.
I know.
She should have run. There were too many of them for her. Why does she have to be so stupid?
Nona shrugged.
Where is Lanotaxis?
You know, the Taxis.
Clara nodded towards the plateau stretching out beyond the pillars. They like to let you spend your power against people they consider expendable, then arrive to finish the job if anything's left to finish.
They do.
He's out there with his soldiers, Anate Noi Guin, his teachers from the Tetragode, others too.
Nona looked down at her sword.
My power's not spent. You think you can kill me without reaching for the path, little Nona?
Clara drew her sword, a twin to Nona's, taken from the body of a red sister. Nona turned away, her back to Clara, looking out across the plateau.
I think I won't need to kill you, Nona said.
I think you'll fight them with me, sister.
The End. This book was read for you by Heather O'Neill, a member of SAG-AFTRA. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Red Sister, First Book of the Ancestor by Mark Lawrence. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.